Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Joel, they gave us a lot to talk about. We'll get to the TV show hype for Sunday's pay-per-view in a moment. I'm glad you're on this week because I think we'll share some similar thoughts about some aspects of the show and the hype. But first things first, Tony Khan's big announcement that has been hyped all week was what opened the show. Tony Schiavone interviewed Tony Khan mid-ring. Tony Khan revealed he purchased Ring of Honor. They sent out a press release to us and others shortly afterwards, announcing moments ago on AEW Dynamite live on TBS, it was announced that Tony Khan has agreed to acquire the assets of Ring of Honor Wrestling from Sinclair Broadcasting Group, including the promotion's extensive video library dating back to 2002, brand assets, intellectual property, production equipment, and more. I want to know what that more is. Where's the sidebar explaining what more there is? And at the end, it said the acquisition will be completed through an entity that is wholly owned by Tony Khan. Further details about the extent of this acquisition will be announced in the coming weeks. In between, they listed 40 members of the AEW roster who have appeared in Ring of Honor during their careers to talk about the overlap in legacy between Ring of Honor and AEW. And there was a quote from Tony Khan and said its influence on modern professional wrestling is etched permanently in the history books. It ensures that its legacy will be kept alive and treated with the utmost respect. The deal adds thousands of hours of content to a rapidly growing library and creates new opportunities to expand our footprint on a national and global scale while having the potential to produce new content under the ROH banner, which was a key line there. I will immediately begin exploring opportunities to make ROH's video library available to fans who have the opportunity to witness the beginnings of careers in some of AEW's biggest stars. So interesting on a number of levels. We will open our our opening segment of tonight's show will be on the Ring of Honor news. Joel, what's your headline takeaway from this? Joel, I can't hear you. Are you muted? Joel, are you muted?
Can you hear me now?
Now we can, yep.
Perfect. I'm sorry about that.
You're a little echoey. I don't know if you're away from the mic or what, but go ahead.
Okay. Just let me know if it's any better or any worse here, and I'll do some adjusting. But I was saying that I was just happy that Tony Khan actually came to the ring for a real announcement this time. And it brings a lot of gravity, too, when he actually does make the appearance. And, you know, this definitely lived up to the hype of a huge announcement. I mean, there was a lot of speculation of different things that this could be. And, you know, some people were saying, including myself, that this could be, you know, a streaming deal with HBO Max. But ultimately, you know, this turned out to be him purchasing Ring of Honor. And, you know, this has a lot of different implications and a lot of different directions that could go. But, I mean, obviously the major thing is that they now own the video library, which is, you know, going to be a valuable asset for them when eventually at some point they do start shopping their own content to another streaming service. So it's interesting in the press release. So one thing I note is that they say they want to continue the legacy of Ring of Honor, which I feel is intentionally a little ambiguous. You know, it could mean, you know, continuing the legacy as far as, you know, still producing shows, which obviously they're going to have that show for WrestleMania weekend in Dallas. And it also could just mean, you know, wanting to celebrate the history of Ring of Honor and, you know, find a way to get that tape library out there. So
it says in the press release, while having the potential to produce new content under the ROH banner. That is a little hedgy. You know, it's not like, and we look forward to producing, or we will produce, but potential to. So maybe that's in there purposefully, or maybe they don't mean it that way, and they just mean, of course, we're going to produce new content. But I'll throw that in there. It seems like they're certainly not closing the door on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, at this point, Tony Khan probably has a good idea of the direction he wants to go. But, you know, it's time will tell, you know, as far as, you know, if it's going to be continuing to produce more content, you know, under the Ring of Honor banner, which just feels like so much of an undertaking for him to take on at this point, with his responsibilities with the Jaguars and obviously AEW, that, you know, could it be something where, you know, somebody else is the booker of it, somebody else is pretty much in charge of the company and he owns it? I mean, there's just so many possibilities, and, you know, now it just leaves the wrestling world to speculate on what's going to come next.
Is ROH best utilized as a developmental company to keep wrestlers busy at live events in the Northeast and traditional ROH towns on a small scale? Isn't that something AEW should maybe look into doing themselves, because they're not running a ton of live events? I get wanting the tape library for a streaming service. You're not going to, you know, sell a lot of Blu-rays or DVDs in this era. So it's cool, and obviously for, like, telling biographical stories to build up feuds, there's footage for that. I don't know how close this deal – I don't know. I'm curious why we didn't see a little snippet or a photograph of Danielson and Daniels from Ring of Honor in the match referenced on that first show. If he did acquire all the content, why didn't we see any of it? This would have been a nice chance to show those two facing off 20 years ago. On that event. So, I mean, there's a lot to unpack and a lot of unanswered questions, and they anticipated that and said that, you know, there'll be further details about the extent of this acquisition will be announced in the coming weeks. I mean, we know the extent of it. Tony owns everything. It's not really the extent of the acquisition, but the ramifications and further plans of usage of the ROH logo. And I just don't know, you know, there's a cachet with a group of fans, tens of thousands of them, but it's not millions. You know, this isn't a WWF purchases WCW moment, even though Tony got in that fun little quip about, this is no Shane, you know, McMahon, it's just me, I own it. There's no son who's going to run in and take over, I'm going to hand it over to. Although this would be a great moment for Shad Khan to walk out and be like, wait a second, Tony, wait a second, you didn't read the fine print, I own Ring of Honor. Do it in reverse, a lost opportunity.
Oh, total lost opportunity. I would have popped so big for that. Oh, my
God. Well, you just did. I'm pleased.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Or Dixie Carter walks out. Let's just take it a step further. That's a step back, actually.
Yeah, but, that's a step back. Several steps back.
Yes, it is. I mean, I'm curious. I do not think, and people are going to be mad at me for saying this, I don't think this is any kind of game changer for AEW. I think it's cool. People are out there, you know, I'm getting messages from people, oh my God, this is amazing, this is crazy. And it's like, well, I mean, it's great that ROH's legacy is in good hands. I mean, I'm super glad their tape library is in good hands. But it also has the ramifications of, were they going to restart? You know, were they going to start running shows again? And wouldn't it be sort of better to have ROH be a strong, independently owned entity doing their own thing with their own vision? Do we need, I mean, AEW has Dynamite, Rampage, Dark Elevation, and Dark. Do they need ROH also? Does that overextend Tony? What is really going to be the purpose of it? Is he just going to hand it off to, like, the handoff control to a booker in training and to give him some practice? Is it really practice if it's just running angles at house shows? Are they like, I just have a lot of questions, but I just don't, I mean, honestly, I just don't think this is like on the top 10 list of things that are going to take AEW to the next level. It's 100% like cool in terms of the ROH legacy as it stands today, but lacking independent ownership to kind of do their own thing and find their own voice sort of takes something away that I was tentatively thinking might happen later this year. Now, this certainly could turn into a whole separate brand and all kinds of things could spring from that. I'm just not sure yet. I think for people love and know ROH, it didn't get in the hands of WWE, and that's a reason to celebrate. And they do have a lot of wrestlers with history with that company. I just don't know where 9 months from now this leaves AEW in a significantly different place.
Yeah, and if they do continue to run shows under that banner, I mean, it's always going to be, you know, the secondary brand to AEW, obviously. Yeah. You know, it's always going to be a lesser thing. So I think there's a lot of possibilities, like you bring up. I could definitely see it as, you know, they run it under the name Ring of Honor. They can bring back, you know, the older logo because that does, you know, resonate with a lot of people, you know, and just use it as like an independent brand where they can go around to, like you said, the Northeast, and they can bring in, you know, they could bring in a lot of the bigger names from the AEW. You could bring in an Adam Cole, you could bring in Bryan Danielson, and then also showcase a lot of the wrestlers that you do see on Dark and Elevation. But the problem is that, like you said, it's not really bringing in any new fans. I mean, all it's pretty much all the same fans. I don't think that there's anyone who is really exclusively watching ROH and shunned AEW, you know, and also it's not like they're bringing in any, you know, new wrestlers from it because of the agreement that Ring of Honor had is that, you know, everyone could basically just go wherever they wanted, you know, as long as they, you know, and some of them are continuing to do the Supercard of Honor show. So like you said, I mean, really what are they buying? I mean, they're buying, the name, the logo, I assume a wrestling ring is in the more, you know, and also the tape library, you know, so there's not a whole
lot.
Some,
and some glaring lighting towers.
There you go. There,
oh, sorry, right into the hard cam.
So yeah, the wonderful, lighting that Ring of Honor has been, gratefully known for. So yeah, but I mean, it's just an exciting thing, you know, as a part of the wrestling world to see where does this take it, you know. But the biggest takeaway is that it's in good hands. It's with Tony Khan, who's going to really appreciate that stuff. He's going to honor that stuff. And so I, you know, but as far as where he's going to take it as a brand, you know, it all remains to be seen. I think that hopefully we'll get some indications, you know, come WrestleMania weekend at that Supercard of Honor show, which I would assume that this news is going to help move some tickets for it. I just checked before, there are tickets available. But you would think that you would see some of the AEW, bigger AEW stars on that show.
Yeah, I'm curious if there's just a lot of wrestlers who, I mean, here's the thing. If Tony Khan wanted anyone from the AEW roster, as of the day after their last pay-per-view, at the end of last year, Final Battle, Tony could have had any of them.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not gaining a roster that he couldn't have had he not bought Ring of Honor from Sinclair. So, you know, again, it just sort of comes down to what is he buying. I remember when there were fans, you know, 10 years ago, give or take, you know, for a long stretch of years, oh, what if WWE bought Impact? Or it's like, well, what are they buying? Like, they don't have a ticket-buying fan base. You know, this isn't like, you know, when T-Mobile acquired Sprint, well, you're like doubling your subscribers. You're getting a bunch of cell towers. You're, you know, you it's like instantly expands your revenue base and makes you much more competitive with Verizon and AT&T. That's not this. And that wouldn't have been the case with Impact either. You're buying, in the case of, you know, TNA Impact, a bad trademark in TNA. That was awful from the beginning, that name. And, you know, especially when these rumors were out, just a damaged brand. I mean, Impact's, you know, better off now. We have a new VIP weekly podcast dedicated to the brand again. And this certainly gives, you know, in a way, it's kind of good news for Impact because it clears the deck for them to be, like, I guess, a clear-cut number three, you know, North American-based company with a nationally televised weekly first-run cable series is kind of what I'm trying to say here. And ROH just doesn't look like that's going to happen unless Tony aspires to strike a deal with a major cable network, whatever's left that he thinks is just the right size for Ring of Honor. But even then, then you get into Tony spreading himself too thin and what wrestlers of value in that network, Ring of Honor, if anyone of value is going to want to strengthen Dynamite. And so, yeah, like I said, I have a lot of questions. I'm not trying to throw a bucket of water on it. I just want let's just keep it in perspective what he's buying here. And it's not, you know, T-Mobile and Sprint merging. This is not instantly adding anything of substance to AEW's revenue-generating lay of the land right now.
Yeah, and that's why I'm really curious about what he paid for this, you know, because they, like you said, he's not buying all these new fans who are just going to come in here and instantly boom, you know, AEW's brand to where it's going to be a lot bigger because you bought this. You know, he's really
buying. He spent the money he's going to spend on Cody.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's probably, you know, a pretty reasonable price, you know, for that video library.
Yeah. Okay, so we got a lot more to talk about, but so let's pause and introduce the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, March 2nd, 2022. I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and PWTorch.com. and the host of the Weight Killer Pro Wrestling post shows and podcasts. Tomorrow on our Blue Logo show, the Weight Killer Pro Wrestling podcast, PW Torch VIP analyst Todd Martin will be with me, and we will talk about this ROH news. We'll preview AEW Revolution and cover all the WrestleMania developments and the Tony Khan presser and whatever happens tomorrow with Pat McAfee and Vince McMahon. Fightful is reporting that there will be an actual full-fledged interview. That's what Sean Rossap's sources are telling him, that there will be a full-fledged lengthy Q&A, not just, you know, an interruption immediately by Austin Theory or a brawl, but there's still thought of an angle setting up something at WrestleMania. So we'll have that covered for you tomorrow on pwtorch.com and then analyzing and reacting to it on tomorrow's flagship. So if you aren't subscribing to both of our Red and Blue Logo shows, just search Wade Keller on your podcast app, and you'll see two logos show up with me on them. Subscribe to both, and you are covered. So what else was I going to say about that? Who knows? Who cares? Let's introduce you, Joel. It's been a while. The other voice you hear is Joel Donnell, longtime PWTorch.com contributor and a frequent co-host on the post shows here. Joel, good to have you on this week. When did we first meet? Was it at an ROH show or an NXT show?
NXT show. It was an NXT show, and it was the one where we were talking about Shinsuke kind of mailing it in.
Gotcha. Yep. I know I'm Jamie Pennick, formerly of MMAtorch.com. We met at an ROH show. I'm pretty sure Andrew Socek and I met first time at an ROH show. Like, I feel like I've met so many contributors over the years at ROH events. So I was wondering, did we meet there? I know we've been at NXT shows together, but I was like, was it ROH? Well, anyway, Joel, good to have you back.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on, Wade. The pleasure is all mine here. Yeah, it definitely brings up memories. I mean, when ROH would come here, you know, not in the early days, but more recently when they had more kind of Adam Cole, Kevin Steen was more kind of the guys on top there.
And by the way, here being the Twin Cities in Minnesota, that's where we're both based.
Correct.
Not everyone knows that, so just throw that in. Go ahead.
And, it's fun to reflect back on those events that when they came here, they used to be at the Hopkins, it's the Eisenhower Community Center here in Hopkins, which is just a suburb outside of Minneapolis. And it's kind of fun that now I live in Minnetonka, which is right next to Hopkins, and I drive by that community center every day, and I just think about, you know, the fun memories of the different wrestlers that, you know, we were fortunate enough to see there. I mean, we saw Evil before he was Evil at that point. We saw Hiromu Takahashi before he was Hiromu, but you also got to see Kevin Steen right before he went to WWE. So just a lot of fun ROH memories that now I'm going to really reflect on, you know, kind of more as more nostalgic for it as I drive by that.
Yes, absolutely. So we have a whole episode of Dynamite beyond that opening announcement. We are absolutely inviting everybody to talk about ROH too and the opening segment and Tony Khan having a prominent in-ring segment on Dynamite, which is not, you know, normally how he goes about making his big announcements. Oftentimes just Tony Schiavone throwing it in during commentary or at the end of a show. This was worthy of Tony Khan standing in the ring. He was clearly excited about this. And I think even if there are people watching Dynamite, and there's going to be more and more of them the longer AEW is around, who have no idea what happened in 2003 or 2007 on the, you know, indie or, you know, non-major league scene. And his excitement about acquiring ROH, I think, can be contagious for some of those viewers who are newer. Obviously, if you're young enough to not know about ROH, you're also young enough to have explored wrestling history on the internet and can become familiar with it by now. But if you thought that it had gone out of business or was a relic or wasn't really a big deal, you can see AEW wants to celebrate its legacy and shine a spotlight on it, and noting that there's 40 wrestlers in AEW who have been in ROH, it does show that there's a great connection between those two brands. And, you know, one thing AEW doesn't have a lot of is history. WWE has a ton of it. AEW alludes to WCW more than WWE does in terms of things that actually happened in Jim Crockett Promotions and under Turner's ownership and Time Warner. Tully and Arn gets a lot more play, for instance, than it would in WWE in terms of their history. But now they have history that dates back 20 years. I mean, they have so many wrestlers and now rights to the footage. It does give them some things to pull footage of to give themselves a sense of being part of a bigger part of wrestling history. And I think Tony is genuinely excited about that. And I think it came through in that in-ring segment. So I invite callers to call us and give your thoughts on that. Our phone number, if you're live streaming us, you can join us, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad if you want to be on the show. If you are in a hurry and you don't want to be on hold, because oftentimes we have a lot of calls and sometimes it can be an hour or longer, if you're going to listen anyway, and then just be patient and we'll get to you, and you never know when. But if you really need to be on early, I don't want that to discourage anyone from call. I don't want that to discourage people from calling if you just want to get in and get your call in early, and we'll certainly do that on a case-by-case basis, and you can email us and let us know that. You can also email us your comments on tonight's show and the ROH News, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com is how you can reach the show. You can email us throughout the week. You can email with questions for our flagship, our mailbag segments. We find a way to often get to your comments, even if we don't get to them right away on our post show, if we get more than we can handle, which occurs now and then. So with that all said, let's get rolling with our callers and see what everybody else has to say about tonight's happenings. Man, we're deep into the show and we haven't even talked about the major angles coming out of hyping Revolution. So I'm excited to start doing that. Let's actually begin tonight with Hinton from London, and then Dom from Cleveland is on deck. Hinton, thanks for calling. Welcome to the show. Your leadoff batter tonight on the callers. What do you think? What stood out? What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. Ironic you call me the leadoff batter. I was actually reading a cricket article here about batsmen.
oh, wow.
So thanks for taking me. The first question, just to build off your ROH points, I don't have much much nostalgia for ROH, but what I do remember is Chris Daniels built up a retirement stipulation with the Young Bucks, and I don't even have much nostalgia for Daniels, but I remember following that. I remember that was the week I happened to catch BTE, and they really built this thing up that he'd be retiring, and if they lost, and they lost, and he retired, and they showed the emotional thing afterward. And so this is the first stipulation that AEW's broken, and I don't think people are going to discuss that. So do you think that it was worth breaking a stipulation for the sake of a nostalgia match here?
I remember Mick Foley saying he wasn't going to be, and Mick Foley adored and revered Terry Funk, but he was not going to be Terry Funk. When he lost the retirement match, he was going to retire. And I think people say that and they're sincere. I think if you stay retired long enough and you have a comeback match, that's coming out of retirement, but not unretiring, if that makes sense. Vern Gagne lost a retirement match, or retired, actually won against Nick Bockwinkel, the AWA title. It was my very first live event. It was a great old school St. Paul Civic Center sold out crowd that was just absolutely bonkers and crazy. And I'm so glad that I was there that night. But the local media, you know, which covered the AWA here in Minnesota, would make fun of when Vern would come out of retirement. You know, oh, he retired, but he's coming back. But he didn't come back full time. Like, he was retired. He just showed up at the office again to, you know, just spend a few, you know, it's like dropping back at workplace after you retired, say hi to people and maybe help someone with you know, find something in an old filing cabinet. I don't know. And I sort of feel like that's what this is. This isn't Christopher Daniels coming back to break his retirement. This is, I mean, where he's going to just start wrestling again. I think this was, hey, we just bought ROH. He's been gone a long time by wrestling standards, and he's going to have a one-off with Bryan Danielson as a cool way to kind of kick off the ROH thing. I think fans are going to be pretty much 100% forgiving on this, and I think they ought to be hitting. What do you think, Joel?
Yeah, I'm in total agreement with that. I mean, his last match was last May, was that tag match with Frankie Kazarian against the Young Bucks. And to be fair, you know, Daniels did have several matches on the indie scene. He, you know, he wrestled for Defy. He was also on the Jericho Cruise in a match. So, you know, as far as wanting to honor the Ring of Honor stuff and, you know, do a match right out of the gate after the announcement and do something cool that fits into the storyline of Bryan Danielson, you know, beating up on the older Christopher Daniels to build to his match at the pay-per-view, I mean, this totally worked for me.
I also think we're at in an era, Hitton, where what happens on TV, and it's still case by case, but what happens on TV, I think fans are willing to compartmentalize as storyline. And if the storyline is adhered to in that universe of Dynamite and AEW, they're going to be more forgiving. And if it's a one-off due to very particular special circumstances, I think they'll be, even more forgiving. So in terms of, Danielson wrestling a date here or there, even outside of AEW, he's still retired compared. I mean, it's hard with the pandemic to tell who's working because who's not working because of the pandemic and indie scene shutting down and all that. But I think people look at it and go, well, he retired from full-time work, but every now and then he'll have a comeback match. And I think people are willing to accept that without being too harsh. I think if it's a really big-name top star who retires and then they just keep coming back, then it feels farcical.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm not really viscerally against it. Just on a personal note, I think part of healthy aging is to keep yourself engaged in your retirement. And if you can still come in to visit the office, that's actually it's a good thing. Now wrestling isn't an office. That could be dangerous if you haven't. He did some flips that I thought, well, this could be dangerous if he hasn't practiced recently. But I'm not really gonna begrudge him for it. So it was a good return. I'll let other people with probably more nostalgia comment on that. I wanna rant about something else though, and I am not feeling this Britt Baker Thunder Rosa feud, and this is disappointing. They had a chance to make this a industry defining feud, in my opinion. This could have been on the level of Becky Lynch, Ronda Rousey. It could have been like Sasha Bailey, even from NXT. Not the same exact storyline, but just in terms of the impact and the memorability of it. But as far as the reason why they're fighting, we don't know. Other than, we know, but it came together so weak. And I talked about that in the past few weeks. And on Rampage, I thought the contract signing this week was a little weak. I mean, Baker's talking about this women's revolution, I thought that was a WWE buzzword from coming out of the Divas era. And she said, oh, Thunder Rosa, you cling on to, you want to be the face of this revolution. I haven't heard Thunder Rosa in character on TV ever mention, ever even talk about the business of women's wrestling. She's always focused on her opponent. She's always focused on the grudge that she has in front of her. And Baker's talking about, oh, you're obsessed with the AEW Women's World title. No, she wasn't. She was wrestling for the TBS title. You screwed her out of that, out of your own stupidity. And then she turned to Martinez, and she's only been focused on you for, that grudge, not even so much your title for the last, 2 weeks or so. It's like she's cutting a promo to thin air, I thought, when I heard Baker. And then Rosa didn't say anything in that contract signing. And this week, I mean, today, she got a very formulaic win over Baker. It's like, all right, we know you're not going to win. We know Rosa's not going to beat Baker. And there just isn't a hot baby face in the women's division right now. And I'm really disappointed in that they've just not given Rosa enough to do to be a real credible threat to Baker. She just feels like she's going to be another body, or maybe they're getting through this match so that Baker can lose it on the one-year anniversary of her winning it at Double or Nothing. I'm not sure, but there's really no one. She feels like the Roman Reigns, except not as good as Roman Reigns, just in terms of Reigns doesn't have many challengers lined up for him, and same goes for Baker. What do you guys make of the women's scene and this feud in particular?
Sure. Thanks, Hinton. Joel, how do you grade the build-up for Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa? Tony Khan earlier in the media conference call, we've got highlights of that, by the way, at pwtorch.com. Sean Radican was on the call. They did not take his question, but they were he was there to monitor and did put up a report on the website. And in there he said, that somebody asked if this was a chance to headline a pay-per-view with the women. It feels like this is the best match they have in the women's division, aside from, I don't think anyone is set up for Jade Cargill at this point. Bigger and Jade has a secondary title with less of a legacy. So Britt and Thunder is the match that has the best chance to be really good. and there's some history with them. But did they do an A-plus, A-minus job building this match up? They had a full contract signing type segment, which certainly adds some gravitas to a feud when it gets the, you know, the cliche, but useful, often useful contract signing segment on a wrestling show. How do you feel about the hype, Joel? And could they have done more, or have they done a great job?
Yeah, certainly there was a lot of big expectations because a lot of AEW fans really loved that match that they had, the Lights Out match on Dynamite, which was, you know, a really iconic image of Baker with all the blood over her face. And that was really, you know, a defining moment saying that AEW's got something here in their women's division. And people had really high hopes for this match. I believe I was talking with Zach Haydorn a few weeks back saying that, you know, this is possibility, you know, like Sean's question, that this was something that could headline the pay-per-view, you know, and I was a little bit more dismissive of it, saying that I think that he's really going to try to stick to having the world title be the one that main events the shows. And at that time, I thought, you know, I can entertain that idea. And, you know, now at this point, it just doesn't have that same gravitas to this match that, you know, that I think a lot of people had hoped for. I mean, actually watching this tag match, I was really disappointed with the crowd reaction. I just felt like there wasn't a lot of heat for this match. You know, the one thing is that, you know, having Thunder Rosa pinning Britt Baker obviously throws a little bit of doubt into who's going to win that match, because before, you know, I was thinking that Thunder Rosa, this is probably going to be the time for her to take that championship. And now with her pinning Britt Baker, you know, trying to throw in all the wrestling logic of, you know, who gets the one up on the other, you know, makes me really question, you know, is Thunder Rosa going to pin her again and win that championship? And so I just feel that, yeah, I would agree with Hinton that this has been a little bit disappointing. And actually this week I probably would have swapped out this match, even though there wasn't a ton of like great wrestling on the show, for just a more solid just promo video, you know, getting to hear more from Thunder Rosa about how much this means to her, about that Lights Out match, referring back to that. And I think that could have served this match a lot better going into the pay-per-view.
It would have been nice to be reminded sometime in the first hour, 45 minutes, that the headline match of the pay-per-view features the AEW World title being defended by Hangman Page against Adam Cole. I almost forgot Hangman was in the promotion by the time we got near the end of the show for the six-man match. I mean, there's things AEW still does, and I, you know, you and I are on the same, I think often on the same page on this, Joel, where it's just, there's a lot that they pour into the show, but I don't know. I mean, I know it's an ensemble company, and not every pay-per-view needs to be built around one top match that, you know, that is the centerpiece, and it doesn't always have to be the world title match. But Hangman Page is struggling to gain traction, I think, and there's enough anecdotal evidence that I think there's something, you know, to it. You got to open up your show. I mean, like, honestly, like, the ROH announcement, I know Tony wanted to pop a rating by having a, I don't know, but it's logical to think Tony wanted to grab the big audience on the go-home show, so to speak, before the pay-per-view with a big announcement. But, man, I would have taken, instead of a non-game-changing but cool acquisition announcement, Hangman Page coming out or Adam Cole coming out at the top of the show and selling me on why I need to watch Sunday, why it is a course-changing, potentially career-changing, big time, you know, it's not, AEW doesn't have any pay-per-views. This is the headline match. And there's no sense of gravity to this compared to what WWE is doing with Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. And so I don't think they did a great job with either of their singles world title matches on this show. And I don't think they did a stellar job just overall in a macro sense promoting these matches. That said, I think they're a little more limited with Baker and Rosa than they should have been with Hangman and Cole. I'm underwhelmed by the job that they did. And you know, the you know, with Punk getting bloodied and hung by a dog collar over the rope, and then later you have similar imagery with Hangman being duct taped and beaten up and taunted. There's just some too much similar imagery. I don't think there's macro quality control over the entire show to step back and go, okay, segment by segment by segment, this pieces together and we're checking all the boxes. But is this a cohesive show that's going to leave people with the right impetus to order the pay-per-view? And we had, you know, two segments in a row with low blows, you know, the Battle Royal and the Punk MJF thing. And you shouldn't have a show where you do back-to-back segments with low blows. You know, I mean, it's not like this hard and fast rule, but it's just generally a polished booker is not going to go to the same bag of tricks twice in a row. It diminishes the impact. And they did that in slightly different ways also with Punk and Hangman getting beat up by heels. And so, yeah, I mean, I had some issues with again, the macro of the show. It's an exciting adrenaline rush, 2 hours. And in the end, if you're a hardcore fan, they checked all the boxes. But I just don't think in the big picture, this was what it could have been as the final two-hour Dynamite show to sell the pay-per-view. Joel, that's a lot for me. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I'm in large agreement with that. That I just feel that, you know, it certainly accomplished the goal as far as hyping the pay-per-view. I mean, there was something for just about every match on the show to get you excited for it, or giving you a promo or a match or some sort of segment with it. But there's a few things that I would have switched around. Just like you mentioned, that at the top of the hour, I really would have made a big deal out of Hangman Page, because I do feel that he's really struggling. And I feel that, you know, having him in the main event with Dark Order is kind of symbolic of that, you know, as I feel the association there has something to do with it. You know, I don't think it's everything, but I think that that's part of it. And I really would have just put the emphasis at the top of the hour that here's our world champion, Hangman Page, and having Tony Schiavone and Excalibur given the hard sell that this is going to be our world title match, and he can give, you know, his claim about it, and then you can have Adam Cole come out there, all while teasing that Tony Khan has a huge announcement for later in the show. And you can do that, you know, right before the main event where Tony Khan, you know, gives the announcement about ROH, and then that's when you can go to the Danielson and Christopher Daniels match, and then leading to the promo with John Moxley. I think that would have been another satisfying way to end the show, just by switching things up a little bit, versus, like you said, where it has very similar imagery between CM Punk being duped by MJF, and then you're seeing Hangman Page, you know, just willingly putting his hands on the rope to get duct taped as, you know, Red Dragon's kind of struggling to get it around him. You know, so I think that there's a couple things that they really could have switched around that could have made this quite a bit more effective and made the baby faces not look like they, you know, put themselves into a corner.
Yep. All right. I have more to say, but we'll keep working our way through calls. Hinton, I want to thank you for the topics you brought up. Good to talk to you.
Perfect. Yeah, thanks. Have a good night, guys.
Yep, you too. All right, so as promised, Dom from Cleveland is up next. Dom, good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, thanks so much for taking my call, Wade. Joel, good to talk with you. Nice to have you on the show tonight. I'm going to keep this quick because I do intend to call back next week as a hopefully an on-site correspondent if you'll have me for Raw. But tonight, I actually didn't watch the show, but I wanted to listen in at 10 o'clock. I was driving home from the Cavs game, and I wanted to know what this announcement was, right? So I'm glad you guys started off the show, gave it right to me. You guys already kind of answered my question in regards to, you know, what I'm going to ask. But, you know, the significance of buying ROH is obviously, you know, you've already, you know, framed it as really, you know, there's really not much there, right, in terms of any kind of revenue-generating product. But I guess I'm wondering, do you think WWE had any interest in that? I mean, I remember when, you know, Sinclair Broadcasting made the announcement, you know, they were essentially going under. My ears started perking, particularly as an investor, thinking if, you know, WWE would end up buying ROH or at least the tape library, given they've got just as many. And if, I mean, maybe they've got somewhat less folks that came from there than AEW, but they've got top guys. I mean, we're talking, you know, top guys right now there from ROH. So certainly I think they'd see some value. I think it was a matter of Sinclair Broadcasting wanting too much and WWE passing on it, or do you think they just didn't really care to begin with and all this talk of budget cuts and whatnot? But that's pretty much all I have, and I'll make a comment on Tony. I love Tony. You know, we're about the same age, but it's not 2001. Okay, he wanted to have his Shane McMahon, I bought WCW moment. I was at that Raw in Cleveland. I remember what that was like. That was awesome. But even then, it was somewhat exhibiting, because if you knew, you already knew WCW was on its way out, and it wasn't necessarily like they, you know, stuffed him out or anything like that. But, and I don't necessarily think Tony was trying to recreate that. But for the most part, though, he's just kind of, I just see this continuing trend of where he places emphasis and importance on kind of the nostalgia aspect and so forth. Like you're saying, where why aren't you selling the pay-per-view this weekend instead of trying to, you know, tug at, you know, those kind of emotions or whatnot. But that's all I got for you. If you can answer, you know, in regards to, you know, did WWE, you think, had a hand in that or just didn't care from the beginning? And that's all I got. I'll call you guys back next week. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. I don't know the extent to which WWE negotiated competitively or enthusiastically. I think if this were 6 years ago, WWE would have had more interest because they'd have more ROH wrestlers in NXT and on Raw and SmackDown of that generation, more footage that they could use, and they would have had a WWE network. And you know, we watched WWE flail for years to try to figure out how they could get so lapsed fans and more people to buy this network. They you know, went into the network era thinking, you know, they were going to have double or triple the number of people just jump on getting the network for $10 a month, and thought it was just a technological leap. So they had to explain to people week after week for what felt like years how to, you know, get us a Roku device or, you know, download the app on which devices. And they did all kinds of studies, you know, surveying people. Would you pay for tiers if you could get this indie promotion or that indie promotion? And I think what they found out internally is their fan base, relative to their fan base, there were very few people who were reacting with knowledge and enthusiasm for paying more to get long tail content. And, you know, the little bits here and there that add up to what they hoped would be a substantial number of additional customers. And I think that soured them on the idea that it was worth the effort to acquire the library, edit it thoroughly, you know, take out what needed to be taken out that doesn't fit their standards, and go through all of that. What? So Peacock can have a deeper library now? That's not going to make any difference to how much money they make each quarter from the checks that Peacock sends them. I don't see where WWE, I mean, they went through a phase, and it was a phase that was fun, and it was great that we had this digital access for the first time to a lot of great content. I just think WWE is in a different place right now as a company, so I just think it made more sense for AEW to gain, like I said, a little bit of legal rights to some deeper history than, you know, 2019. Joel, your thoughts?
Well, Dom, you missed out on this amazing moment when Shad Khan came onto the screen and said, "I now own Ring of Honor Wrestling." So you'll have to go back and see that moment on there. But yeah, I mean, I just think that WWE probably just wasn't as interested. I know that they've borrowed pictures before from Ring of Honor. They've used things from Pro Wrestling Illustrated to help, you know, better tell some of their stories and promo packages. But to everything that you said, Wade, I think that they're more focused on, you know, churning out their own new content, you know, using their old stars versus, you know, getting Ring of Honor, which includes a lot of wrestlers who are primarily have gone to AEW at this point. I think that it would have just been a nice another feather in their cap, but, you know, it just doesn't make as much business sense for them to make a purchase, which we, you know, like I said, we don't know how much money it was, but I don't think it was, you know, a crazy amount. But still, I mean, it's the whole headache of it. And, you know, I'm sure that, you know, however much say, you know, Joe Koff had in the transaction, you know, buying it from Sinclair, that, you know, this is all, you know, it's happy that this guy is excited to be buying this brand, and they know that it's going to be in good hands and it's going to be treated with the respect that it deserves. So I feel like just Tony Khan had probably more of a clear path to purchasing these. That's at least the way I interpret it based on his, you know, his different quotes and interviews leading up to this announcement.
Oh, by the way, we got an email from, let me give credit here, David, I guess no last name, who just said the stipulation wasn't that Daniels had to retire. It was just that SCU had to break up. Does that refresh your memory on that, Joel? Because I remember SCU had to break up. I remember it felt like months before they brought it to Dynamite. They talked about it on AEW Dark, and it was sort of like, it was just kind of weird. It just sort of hovered there, but they didn't follow up on it. And then they did, but as Hinn was talking about it, I thought that I was maybe remembering wrong, but I thought, and he was obviously remembering it that way too, that there was something about we're going to break up, but also that Daniels was sort of throwing in the towel, that he was, you know, slipping on the top rope, didn't have it anymore, and that this would be the end. Do you remember in more detail than I do where, if it extended beyond just SCU had to break up, or are Hinton and I remembering that wrong?
Yeah, you're definitely refreshing my memory on that. That was the stipulation, was just that SCU was going to break up and they were all going to go into different directions at that point. But yeah, I think that it wasn't like a definitive Christopher Daniels is retiring, but it was definitely something that they were hinting at. And I remember there being some speculation at the time, you know, is this going to be Danielson coming back for, you know, he'll be gone for a while and then come back for one more run and then be done after that. So, you know, the more that I'm thinking about that, that's pretty much what I remember now, is that it was just breaking up SCU with teasing that Daniels was going to be done.
Yeah, and that was kind of the end of him. As an on-air figure at that point.
Correct.
Christopher Daniels. I'm glad that Christopher Daniels isn't active in AEW at the same time that Bryan Danielson is, because it's hard enough to not say Daniel Bryan versus Bryan Danielson, but then you add Christopher Daniels to the mix, and it's just like, I'm tripping over myself constantly. His Wikipedia page is like the longest of almost any wrestler. He had just what a lengthy career, and he had accomplished so much. But Wikipedia summary does just say they were forced to split up following their defeat to the Young Bucks. It isn't mentioning that there was any kind of formal retirement stipulation. So I think just the split up and then him disappearing altered our memories into something that didn't happen. So I stand corrected on that, unless someone wants to validate my fuzzy memory that Hinton obviously had too, that there was some sort of retirement added to that came maybe after that stipulation was fulfilled. So anyway, with that said, let's keep going to our phone calls here. You can get in line, by the way, if you're live streaming us, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad to let us know that you want to be on the show. All right, we're going to go to area code 313 next. 313, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello, Wade. It's Hendrick. Usually in Portland, currently in Orlando, waiting for Revolution and Rampage
cool.
and stuff like that. But
you're there like 5 days. You're there 5 days early, or I guess 2 days early for
Disney
well,
World.
I just flew in. Yeah, I'm going to. I have a Star Wars Cantina. I'm going to be doing other stuff, basically. So whatever.
Gotcha.
But I was going to tell you, first time you met me was in All In, and you gave me your card, and you're waiting for a long time for Matt Coon and Jeff Bagwell to do their thing, and it was really awkward and weird, but I got your business card, so that's when you met me, and hey, Joel, nice to talk to you.
Good to talk to you too, my friends.
So anywho, I'm a little worried about the tag team division in AEW. Like, they have, like, the best tag teams in the world, but they're kind of rubbed the wrong way. Like, I mean, FTR is amazing. They're not going to be on the pay-per-view on Sunday. Santana and Ortiz are not going to be on the pay-per-view. So I guess my main question is, like, you got all these great tag teams, but you can't really do a whole heck of a lot with them. So what's going on? Like, and I hated all of the tag team turmoil bullcrap stuff that's been happening. It's been waiting around for spots, like doing a bunch of nothing. I hate it. What do you think?
Yeah, is it Kendrick or Hendrick? I want to get your name right. I forgot what you said.
Hendrick with an H.
Gotcha. Okay,
Hendrick
good.
With an H.
Hendrick, I am with you on the tag team battle royal stuff. I think AEW does too many battle royals. I also, and this gets to some of my issues with the show, where I didn't think it was particularly refined. They didn't even explain, like, what was at stake. Like, there's so many assumptions that everyone is just glued to social media and memorizing everything that they saw 7 days ago. Think about how the world has changed in 7 days. and everybody's got their lives. And then you tune in and there's this battle royal again with special stipulations. Excalibur sort of quickly explained the rules about 90-second entries. I don't think he said what was at stake. Like, they just, you know, it's what Cody Rhodes said. You shouldn't need shoulder content, and you shouldn't need a flow chart, and you shouldn't need to take notes and study, you know, between Dynamite every Wednesday to know what's going on. And they just don't have that person who's saying, wait a second, we're doing two low blows. Wait a second, we're hanging someone from the ropes and duct tying, you know, from a dog collar and duct taping someone to the ropes. We need to do one or the other, but not both. And, you know, we should probably take a moment to explain this. By the way, when 2.0 come out, say their names. Tony Schiavone, don't go these guys. Like, say their names. I can barely remember Matt Lee's name. I because they never say it. You know what I mean? Like, so anyway, that's a sidebar.
I've never heard his name. Never heard his name on AEW television.
The ring announcer said 2.0, and then Excalibur says they, and then Tony Schiavone said these guys. And I know Vince McMahon gets heckled and mocked for WWE speak, and he takes it too far. But he always tells his announcers, don't just say the last name. Don't use pronouns. We're on national television. We believe in these guys if they're on our TV show. We need the viewers to know their names. Never miss an opportunity. I remember Paul Heyman, God, 30 years ago, telling me how frustrated he was on WCW television that Tony Schiavone referred to wrestlers in WCW as these guys. Well, WWE, to the other extreme, the other annoying extreme, called them superstars. Like, there is a happy medium. There's something, you know, Tony's super casual and people love him because he's buttoned down. He's a regular guy. And I get that. But he's sort of the example of the other extreme. And tonight it kind of irked me a little bit. You have all these rapid-fire wrestlers coming out in this tag team battle royal. No sense of, like, did the librarian return? When did he enter? And who was his partner? Like, there was so much going on and so many teams we haven't seen in forever. If you only watch Dynamite, again, going to Cody saying you shouldn't have to watch older content for Dynamite to make sense. I get his frustration with the product and his, you know, particularness about his appearance, I think, carries over to him being particular about the cohesion of a show. And, yeah, these tag team battle royals just felt like, let's get everybody on Dynamite. And it feels like it's become a shortcut, Joel, for booking. And it also was made worse by the fact that it just felt – like, it was obvious who was going to win. And so the drama wasn't there. Battle Royals aren't typically my favorite thing. And 2 weeks in a row, throwing a bunch of tag teams out there, giving them a random chance that they don't really deserve to have to go to a pay-per-view and enter a tag team title match makes a mockery of all the rankings and record-keeping, too. So, Hendrick, you pushed a button with me. I'm with you. What do you think, Joel?
I would say, for the record, with the exception of the Royal Rumble, because of its history, I am always against a battle royal defining who's going to be into a title match. I just don't. I think it really diminishes the title to put it into a battle royal, because it's just a match where a lot of people are laying around and all you have to do is throw somebody over the top rope. So it's just not the thing for me. But yeah, this is the product of having a lot of people on your roster. And, you know, we talk about, you know, who's going to be on the pay-per-view, who's not going to be on the pay-per-view. And it's the same thing with the shows too, is that they're trying to find ways to get people onto the shows and remind you that these guys still work here, that they're still here. But, you know, if they're going to do that, to your point, Wade, is that they actually have to put in the work and learn these people's names and give you that backstory and not just assume things with their audience. I mean, AEW has enough tag teams, but was this not the opportunity to debut somebody like the Briscoes to be in that last spot to come into it instead of 2.0, which is just the most blah thing, you know, and then go into a program with FTR to at least give it some little drama, you know, because the whole match you're just waiting for the Young Bucks to win, because that's the obvious thing that's going to happen, because they're the biggest name tag team in that match. So, you know, with the exception of just the last couple of minutes where we got to see the return of Darius Martin, Minneapolis local here. So that was really cool to see that. But really, outside of that, it just took away any sort of drama just waiting for the Young Bucks to win this match and finally just be announced for this pay-per-view, which we all assumed, you know, weeks ago, because they have to find a way to get the Bucks on the pay-per-view. And so it kind of limits a lot of the things that they can do in the tag division.
Hendrick, I'll throw it back to you. You can follow up or add a different topic if you'd like.
Well, I mean, I guess, like, it's kind of like tag teams have the same type of dilemma, like, women wrestlers had in WWE for a while. It's just like, you know, we only have so many spots for you, so you better shine now or get lost, like, type of thing. Like, it's just like, I don't know. I feel like there should be a better tag team deal going on in AEW right now. Because when I was a kid watching wrestling, like, my favorite was the tag team wrestling. Like, I loved the Hart Foundation. I loved Demolition. You know, they weren't the best, but whatever. But,
they were good.
Saw this. But it was just like, man, I want to see this good tag team wrestling. And you have all the best tag teams on earth in AEW, and there ain't a whole lot going on. And I started blaming on the Young Bucks. I mean, that's their thing.
I think this actually is symptomatic of AEW trying to feature too many wrestlers. SmackDown right now has too few. Raw has too few, not as dire of a situation as SmackDown in terms of roster depth, but, you know, not everybody should be on every show in the segment against the person they're feuding with, and that's the entirety of your roster with, you know, 3 to 6 exceptions who aren't in any way being built up or likely to be relevant. AEW just has so many, and, you know, they're when wrestlers just show up and you're like, oh, they're still on the roster. I think to Tony Khan and the people who are immersed, they're like, well, I see him every week backstage, or I see him when I screen Dark, or I see him when I do the format sheet for Dark Elevation. Yeah, but I just don't think AEW is presenting their product through the lens, a clear lens of the vast majority of their fan base. And by the way, the potential fan base, the people who stop by and check in with the show but aren't ardent fans watching every week, you have to look through the lens of the fans who are only watching Dynamite and decide, you know, who you're going to push and focus on them and find a way to utilize the other talent who are on the bench or in the bullpen, however you want to look at it, or in developmental or in the minor leagues, find a way to make their impact really matter. But when they show up, focus on them. Like, I mean, Jay Lethal, I was in the building and he got a really nice pop for showing up. And it was like, whoa, there's something here. People actually... Yeah. Reacted to him more than I thought they would. I brought that up to him in the media Q&A afterwards. And I mean, I think it was genuine. I think he was, especially with everything he had been through and being part of a smaller brand, it was just like, whoa. The Minneapolis reacted to me like this was a major star. And what's happened with him since? Like no moment.
Nothing.
And maybe that, what's that?
I said nothing. I mean, Jay Lethal, like,
yeah,
I mean,
nothing, yeah.
I paid money to see him headline the show not too long ago, but he's like,
yep.
you know, absent here. It's just like, ugh.
So yeah, it's about just kind of staying focused. It's, I know it's, you know, Christmas morning and there's all these toys and you unwrap them and it's like Tony just bounces from one to the other. And then there's this toy in the corner behind the chair and you forget about it because there's all these other gifts to unwrap. And so you see that, I mean, it sort of manifests with the tag team battle royal where, hey, we have a spot to fill, or a couple spots to fill, so we're going to have a couple battle royals a couple weeks in a row to show off the depth of our tag division. But if the depth just leads to this big blur without anyone having a sense of anything other than, hey, that's a tag team that isn't getting a push that I wish would, and you don't have any faith you're going to see them consistently over the next month or two, yeah, I mean, it can be frustrating and overwhelming. It's philosophically, it's I think, deliberate to kind of overwhelm people with the roster depth and kind of keep people guessing. But when you end up with, you know, I think below ideal pushes for your main event singles titles for men and women going into a pay-per-view, you know, that you only do 4 times a year. Again, the battle royal is symptomatic of what leads to that. There just were too many wrestlers and they could have gotten to that in a different way. Hendrick, anything else you want to say before we move on?
All right. One quick thing. My friend Alex in Idaho asks, is there any chance Cody could helm Ring of Honor?
Yes, there's a chance. I think that's actually a really fun question. Until Cody shows up in WWE, and again, I have to watch how I say this because, you know, in terms of how it was confirmed to me, that's where he was headed. So I'm just being real respectful to my sources on that. But until he shows up on WWE TV, he's not there. Until there's a signed contract, not the intent, not he's telling people that, not that's you know, a verbal agreement, and where else would he go? And we're talking in WWE as if, you know, he's going to be here, all of that. Until he does, I mean, I'm fine with speculating. You know, if something fell through, or it was some master plan with a ton of deception, and it leading to Cody running ROH and Tony giving him that toy to play with. I mean, it's fun to talk about. I don't think so. But it the idea of Cody doing some sort of leverage takeover of Tony's new acquisition. I mean, I think they would have done the angle differently tonight if that was going to be the case. Because, I mean, the press release says Tony's going to own it. How then does Cody usurp that, you know, intercede and legally take over something that a press release said? But Cody and Tony haven't been bashing each other. You know, they sent out nice press releases. There was a bit of a dig that Tony took on the media Q&A today. I don't know that he meant it that way because I don't think it's in Tony's nature to be passive aggressive in this way, but nevertheless, it came across that way to me and others, which was someone asked, you know, do the Bucks need to be, I think it was in the context, do the Bucks need to be on the pay-per-view? Can you have all your EVPs not on a show? And he says, hey, we already had one great show without Cody. The question was, is Sunday a way to prove you can have a great pay-per-view without Cody? And Tony reacted, I already had a great pay-per-view without Cody. And he talked about one last year. So, all out. So I think, but again, I don't think that was like a personal thing. So I don't know. I'm just thinking, spitballing out loud. If there's anything that seems to disqualify it, Joel, what do you think of that fun little idea that, you know, you can't get along with the EVPs and you're unhappy, go run ROH.
I mean, in a fantasy wrestling world, I mean, it's a fabulous idea to explore. To see Cody, you know, putting himself out there at the Supercard of Honor show in Dallas, you know, saying that he's going to run the thing now, getting all fired up there. And I'm sure he'd love it. I'm sure he'd love to, you know, be the top booker there and book himself and into main events and all that stuff. You know, in an alternate universe, it's a fun thing to speculate about. But as far as any realistic chance of it,
hell no.
We'll leave it. Yeah. you said it, Hendrick. Yeah. I think but you're right.
It's fun to think
we're
about.
All just kinda waiting.
Exactly. Totally. And that's where Shad Khan would have to come in. Tony, not so fast. your lawyers are my lawyers, and you didn't read.
It's like we still have all these like weird, like big show, whatever thing on the books. Like, what are they going to do with the reality show? I still don't know what's up with that.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's done. If you know, I don't think that's going to be. They're going to be going forward with that. But I'm not 100% sure on that. I mean, the Big Show show?
Yeah.
That just
big,
is
big,
in the can.
Big,
you know,
big show.
Yeah. Yeah, that's in the can. So
give it to another couple. Put Britt Baker and Adam Cole on the show. I don't know.
No, want to see Moxley.
Moxley and Renee.
There we go.
Miss Renee. That's the most amazing show anyone could watch, in my opinion. Mox trying to deal with reality TV show people.
Just
what do you think?
Oh, God. it'd be fun, but I think Mox would say no.
I'd like to see him just, like, deal with it. But anywho. All right
cool.
Love you, boy.
Hendrick, appreciate it. Thank you. Enjoy your fun weekend.
All right. See ya.
Have fun at the cantina.
Yep. Yes. All right, cool. All right, let's move next to Deke in Michigan. Deke, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Wade, hallelujah, man. For once, you have come around, my young Padawan. You have turned to the dark side. I agree with dang near every single thing you have said so far tonight. Exactly, to a T, man. Starting with the beginning, you know, I guess we're at the year anniversary of last year's exploding barbed wire death match, and this was another popcorn fart finish. I mean, okay, you bought ROH. Like, who is really caring about that? I mean, honestly, it he sold this again, and somehow he sold this more than any other surprise that he's ever sold. And it couldn't possibly live up to the way he sold it. And it was just like, okay. I mean, I don't think there's anything negative about it, but it's no big deal. Like you said, man, it's absolutely no big deal. And you get the library. But really, didn't they already have the Honor Club thing? They already had their own streaming thing, right? And, like, apparently nobody cared enough that they shut down for a while here. I mean, apparently nobody cared that much. And you're getting Danielson. You are getting Punk's matches, maybe Cole. But, like, WWE has already used Punk's ROH footage years ago. I just don't see how this is some massive thing. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. And as you always say, all this does, Wade, again, is just pump up the guys that are already excited about your product. Nobody else other than them are going to care. And I had two different friends who don't even know each other. One right after it happened tonight at the beginning of the show, and then one literally about 10 minutes ago. They both said the same thing. Two different texts. I have acquired Blockbuster Video. That's what they did. On Netflix,
wow.
I am Netflix, and I acquired Blockbuster. They both said that. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I don't know. I know you guys.
Well, at least Tony got
a little bit. Or... Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and some lights, as you said. I don't know if you guys have anything else to say about that, or if you just want me to move on to something else. But because I know you've already talked about it. But yeah, I mean, again, it's
I think I'd probably
but
yeah, I would probably go into repeating myself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
The other thing.
Well, I mean, people care. It's just, I would put it in the category of who cares, because people care, Deke. I just think it's not a game changer for AEW, and it ultimately felt like a bit of a distraction that drew more viewers in, so it's a good thing, but a bit of a distraction from where the focus should be this week, which is trying to pop the biggest buy rate they've had. And here we are talking a lot more about the merits of Ring of Honor. But I know people who care. I've heard from them tonight. They're very excited. But stepping back, it's not all about any one person. It's about the big picture. And in the big picture, like I said, I don't think it's a positive and not a negative, depending on how much Tony spent. But it doesn't change the things that are pertinent to AEW's growth and profitability. I shouldn't say that. Profitability-wise, if they launch a streaming service, I think having that footage is super cool and valuable. And something like that actually necessary to build a streaming service. You know, somebody had suggested maybe what's the term they use on streaming services for the sub-channel? I can't remember the name. I usually say it. But a section of HBO Max that's like AEW. If you
like
do that and you have AEW and Ring of Honor...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If I open HBO Max, I'll know what it is because they use that term. A hub within the app. And so, you know, yes, it's a good thing. And it could make a difference monetarily. But that's it. You know, I mean, so we'll see. Anyway, I don't want to repeat myself. Deke, go ahead and change the topic.
Yeah. But, I mean, and who cares compared to the way he hyped it? I mean, he made it sound like he was about to buy WWE. You know, I mean, come on. This guy's got to take it easy a little bit with this stuff, because eventually he's going to piss people off. You got that right.
Defense of Tony Khan, and because in defense of Tony Khan, and I like Tony, I get along with him, but I also don't like filter my words, as people know, and I think Tony respects that. But I'm going to defend him here. I don't think Tony Khan said, I'm going to turn this announcement into something more than most people are going to think it is. I think Tony genuinely thought his hype matched this announcement. And I think he would be surprised or at least disagree with people who thought that he overhyped it, and vociferously disagree with people who said that he was just being a promoter overhyping something, because I do think his credibility is important to him. And I think he's genuinely excited about the things that he seems genuinely excited about. Did he overhype Christian Cage? Yeah, he did. I don't think he did it on purpose. I think he would take it back seeing the sort of shoulder shrug that a lot of wrestling has. So I just think Tony is more enthusiastic about it than a lot of other people are going to be. I don't think it was him nefariously overhyping at the pop rating.
Yeah, and to clarify too, Wade, yeah, I don't think there was any sort of malicious intent, you know, with the way that he was hyping this. I'm just saying that that's what he does. He's a promoter. He's gonna give it, you know, his all and make it into a big deal. I mean, as a wrestling promoter, are you gonna say, yeah, I got something to say, but it, you know, it's not a big deal. Some people care about it, but you know, not everybody. You know, you're gonna make it into a big deal. And truthfully, like you see the excitement in him that he's, you know, he's screaming this announcement because he's so pumped up to tell everybody about it. And so I believe he's totally genuine with it.
I do too.
Cool.
I think you're both right, but I think that could also be a problem because he doesn't know how to get more than he thinks these things are going to grow, as you always say, the next million. I don't know that they're gonna. So anyway, on to the next thing, man. The Battle Royal, I'm with you 1,000% there too. I was confused last week when they were talking about, okay, they qualified, but then they made it sound like, well, they're not in the match, or are they in the match? I didn't know what was going on there. And then, again, this week, all of a sudden, there's another Battle Royal, only this time it's just the Royal Rumble. And after everybody kind of crapped on last week's match, all the shows, all the newsletters, everybody dumped on that thing. I was shocked they were doing another one this week. And again, it's a casino battle royal. Everything's a casino. They just take WWE's matches and change the name to casino. No matter where they're at, they're not in Vegas, but here's the casino battle royal, and here's the casino ladder match, and yeah, why are we doing that? And speaking of the ladder matches, you mentioned it again earlier. I completely agree. Guys are getting title shots for absolutely no reason. And now this ladder match that they're having at Revolution. These guys all had to qualify to get into the ladder match. And then the winner of the ladder match gets a TNT title shot. Am I right? The same TNT title that literally they just give people title matches every single week. For no reason whatsoever. Guys just did.
Yep.
When Cody was the champion, he's bringing in indie guys who I'd never even heard of every week. And that's how we met Eddie Kingston. But, like, they're just giving these matches away every week. But these guys over here
have
to win a qualifying match.
It comes when you sign a contract, you get a title. When you sign an AEW contract, it seems like you just automatically are given a TNT title shot.
Right, yeah. So I just find it funny that these guys have to win a qualifying match, then win the ladder match. Oh, now you get a title shot. But for some reason, Andrade gets another one this Friday. I don't understand that whatsoever. Last thing, Punk MGF, if you remember, I haven't been a huge fan of this feud. I think MJF's performances have been awesome. The last 2 weeks, his performances have been, but the storyline was just kind of nothing. I'd like it. You mentioned it. You know he was lying. You knew he was lying. And Punk was going to look dumb in the end. And Punk looked dumb today in the end. And then once again, we had to have the Scarface bathroom chainsaw scene. I mean, this happens every other week. I'm completely numb to it. Every week, some dude is just gushing blood. It doesn't even mean anything anymore. Because week after week after week, and here we are again. It's the scene from Scarface. It didn't do much for me just because of that. I mean, we saw it with, who was it, 2 weeks ago, Paige, in his title match, and he was a mess. And I don't know. It's just too much. They're using it too much.
Well, we haven't brought that up yet, so my apologies to MJF and CM Punk if they tuned in wanting to get feedback on their angle. And there's more that to come. Like, I mean, I feel like it is a show where so much happened, and it's the go home show on a pay per view. And the number one topic last week coming out of Dynamite was MJF and Punk, and we're well over an hour into the show. And we're finally getting around to it. And that some of that is happenstance, randomness of the order of taking calls, and also kind of proves the point, or doesn't prove it, but evidence to our point that maybe the ROH thing is more of a distraction in terms of what's on people's minds, you know, with 4 days to go to the pay-per-view. But I want to frame this as a very big storyline and the number one selling point for this pay-per-view. We ran a Twitter poll last week, overwhelmingly in the sense that it was the only one to get more than 50% of the vote, and it had more than a 2-to-1 margin over the second most attractive match on this card. People are looking forward to MJF Punk the most as the selling point to get them to buy this pay-per-view. So I want to give it some attention here. Is the long route I took to get to that point. It deserves some attention here. Don't think it's not important because we didn't get to it this late. And I want to talk about this. I'm curious how people feel. Deke, the performances of MJF are great. Todd Martin and the Fix last week, you know, was like, okay, I got to compliment MJF for the performance. And I hate to say anything negative, you know, about something when the performance is so good and so compelling and pulls you in and all that. I wrote this in my report tonight, covering Dynamite at pwtorch.com. I think Punk showed the right amount of skepticism, but MJF's acting and the fact that there was, you know, real life evidence, and he had talked about this in MLW before, and there's just like, it felt very believable. So you can imagine a good-hearted person who has come around to no longer be a bad guy, as Punk, you know, laid out in his history of his psyche. You could see how he'd be someone who would want to give an opportunity. He would want to be open-minded to the possibility that MJF is turning the corner like he did. So I think everything there to protect Punk the babyface from seeming like a gullible sucker was done. The lasting question that I had, and I haven't had time because of the frenetic pace of Dynamite and trying to cover it live and then going right to doing this live show, but the question I was left with when I had to move on from my analysis and my report is, what was MJF's purpose, now that we see sort of the final chapter in the hype tonight, what was MJF's purpose for burying his soul in that way last week and tricking Punk into hugging him and then, you know, kicking him between his legs and bloodying him and hanging him? Like, what did that accomplish mentally or physically when he, you know, probably could have beat up Punk without tearing up and telling this real life heartbreaking story about anti-Semitism and bullying in high school? So Joel, I throw to you, you can answer that and to set the stage however you want to your other opinions.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this was kind of the logical next step of the story based on what we saw last week between these two guys, which you had mentioned that, you know, they're both giving really good performances, you know, during these segments. But, you know, I also have to agree that I thought that CM Punk kind of made him look gullible, you know, a little naive in this, that he's a smart character. You know, he's supposed to be a really smart guy. And I mean, everybody saw this, you know, coming from a mile away, that, you know, of course he's going to give him the nut shot. I mean, that's just that's of course what's going to happen. And so, I mean, but MJF's logic with this, you know, is he's trying to give Punk a false sense of security to lull him into this, into a beatdown. And so, you know, I overall thought that the performance of this was good. I thought that the fans were into this. I think that it's still the hottest match going into the pay-per-view. So overall it worked. But, you know, just on a micro level, it's like CM Punk just it's one moment that just made him not look like the smart character that we're led to believe he is.
And my point is I think Punk was protected enough. I guess I disagree with you a little bit on that. That I think Punk is savvy and street smart, but he also was once evil. He listed the evil things he did. I'm sure a lot of fans are like, "You did all that stuff, Punk? When? Like, that's awful." You know, they knew some of it, but not all of it. You know, the pallbearer thing. Oh yeah, but like the, you know, pouring alcohol down an alcoholic's throat, and I mean, he kind of reminded us some of the heinous things he had done, and I think they did a good job, and Punk didn't hug him right away. He acknowledged, you know, maybe he's gaslighting me. I thought that he really gave himself plausibility where he wouldn't be seen as gullible. I think some people disagree with this, and I think you are, Joel, but I thought he protected himself enough. My issue is just, boy, was that it seems to me like a potentially needless long route to go to just beat him up. And so I'm trying to like wrap my brain around, besides the idea of MJF, the person, thinking, hey, this would make for great television, and there's something to be said for that. What does the MJF character gain from messing with Punk's head in that way and then turning on him? And I'm not saying there isn't something there, but I'm still trying to kind of figure out, what did he accomplish? Did he shake Punk's confidence in his own ability to judge a situation? Is that part of the mind game? And so, like I said, I'm more just working my way through this. So, Deke, I'll go to you and then throw back to Joel.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. Like, I thought he was trying to protect himself, but then in the end, he was still patting him on the back. Like, oh, poor guy, I got you, poor guy, you know. And I thought last week, I totally agree. When all that happened, I'm like, well, where's this going? When we know he's just going to turn on him. Exactly. Yeah, you can beat him up whenever you want. People get beat up every single time they do an interview in the back after three words. They get, I don't know. I thought the same thing. One other thing about this, you mentioned the kicking in the nuts. And Wade, you mentioned this earlier in the show too. We're the continuity here. Last week after the black segment, those guys all just murdered 50 security guards. In the very next segment, Chris Jericho brought out a bunch of security guards to keep him and Kingston separate. When we just saw a bunch of security guards show they can't beat up anybody, then this week the battle royal is won with two straight kick to the nut shots in a row. And then in the very next segment, a straight kick to the nut shot by MJF. It's like, did they not go over this stuff before? That was another thing that I was just like, we just saw the same exact thing, you know, over here. So, yeah, that was it on that topic.
Yeah. Yeah. Nope, I agree. Anything else you want to bring up, Dee?
Just the end. I don't know. Yeah, the Paige-Cole match just couldn't be. It really couldn't, and tonight didn't help. You know, I'm sorry. I know there's some people that like the Dark Order, but, I mean, to me, Paige is just in there with a couple of dudes, man. That did nothing for me. And even Red Dragon, I know a lot of people did know them from ROH. As you can tell, I'm not really excited about the streaming or buying the library because I didn't watch ROH. And I don't watch NXT. So I knew who these guys were, but I don't know anything about them. I know nothing about these guys. And since they've come in, AEW has not told me anything about these guys. And they keep, they're in big matches. They keep winning big matches. I know the one guy's name's Fish, and I know the other guy's name's Kyle. And they're buddies with Adam. I mean, they don't tell us. They're just like, well, you know, because you watched ROH and you watched NXT, the show that we told you we kicked their butt in the ratings forever, but now we're putting all their guys in the main event. Like,
good.
Okay,
yeah.
I don't know who they are.
Yeah. All right. Deke, I appreciate the call. I'll respond to that. Always good to hear from you. Thanks. Yeah. So if I'm reading a fiction series of books by an author, and there's these characters that I got introduced to in the first book, and there was, you know, storyline, and then there's a follow-up book, and then I read that, and I've been on this journey with all these characters, and then like late in the second book or sometime in the third book, all of a sudden, some other author's book series of novels a couple characters come over from that, get dropped in the middle of the book, and people who read that series of books, who I am in a book club with or correspond with, are like, oh my God, this is so great. I can't believe that sheriff from that town who solved that crime in that other series is now here. And, oh, it's so exciting to see that sheriff interacting with this deputy. And, oh my God, this is great. And you're like, I didn't read that series of books. I don't know anything about this sheriff. And the author is dropping him in and only catering to people who read that other series of books who know the sheriff's full background. I'm going to be upset. And we're hearing from these people. They wanted AEW to be this fresh start. They don't want you to need to catch up on 20 years of ROH or have watched NXT in recent years. They wanted AEW to be this new cast of wrestlers. You know, Jungle Boy and Darby and Ricky Starks and on. I mean, it's like the acclaimed. AEW had this whole roster and they were doing well. And now it does. It seems like it's this parade of Jay Lethals and Bobby Fishes and they're – I mean, I'm not against CM Punk and Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole, but it has felt, I don't know, dating back to Christian and Malachi Black, where it's like, boy, we had a good roster for the first 2 years, but wait until we bring in all these mid-carders from these other rosters, then it's going to really be great around here. And I think it has had a offsetting effect. It's exciting to see new names that a lot of people know, but it also, I think, is turning some people off who are like, I thought AEW was the best. And now AEW is telling me, all these other wrestlers were great, but you're not introducing me to who they are. And I think there is too much of that going on, Joel.
Yeah, I mean, that's been my thought process through all this, is that, you know, I don't want to see everybody in AEW. I mean, that's, I want to see other guys go to some of the other promotions and you know, make their name there, and then maybe bring them in, you know, if AEW has a special, agreement with them, then you can bring them in that way. But I just feel like there's just bringing in way too many people where they start losing meaning over time. You know, I very much date it back to, you know, bringing in Christian, and Christian's a good wrestler and all that. But at that point, it was just kind of like, man, they're bringing in everybody who's becoming available, you know, that Tony Khan has an appreciation for. And, you know, I know that there's not as many places to work right now because of the pandemic, but it's just overkill and an overload of so many people bringing it in. But I want to talk back about the main event as well with Hangman Page and Adam Cole, is that I just feel like, yeah, this main event just feels like, you know, it should be this awesome, cool main event between Adam Cole, who is one of their hottest acquisitions that they brought in from NXT, and against Hangman Page, who they're trying to build into this mega star. And I do believe it's going to be a really good in-ring match. But, you know, at the time, I didn't think it was as big of a deal because I thought that he could recover from it with his promos. But I really feel that loss to Orange Cassidy just a few weeks back has really did a lot of damage to this.
But it was a lights out match, so it doesn't count in the record books, Joel. So
the undefeated Adam Cole.
Yes, he's still undefeated. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's just, yeah. Well, that's almost, to me, is like almost insulting your audience. You know, that it's like, I understand that it's not technically a part of his record because it was a lights out match, but I mean, it's just really taken away any heat from this feud at all just by seeing that visual pin. So it's, I feel like it's just had more of an effect than I really realized at the time.
And it is tough to take as seriously the AEW World title match if there's these other problems going on with the challenger and the way that he's been booked, and the lack of it seeming like the showcase in the center of the universe, when the AEW title and the AEW champion, since he won it, hasn't really changed the course of AEW. Like, when you think of WWE, there's the Big E era of being the champion on Raw. Like, it felt like he was the face of the brand. There's clearly the Roman Reigns era. Like, when you think about WWE and who the champion is of that time, it defines that era of television as much as anything else. Obviously, there's other people who can be involved in a big storyline you care about who feel important, but the world champion is just rarely lost in the mix. And in AEW, that was the case with Kenny Omega a lot of the time, less so with Jericho. He knows how to assert himself and be a centerpiece. Moxley, less so, but somewhat. But this has not been, you know, like, wow, if Adam Cole beats Hangman Page, everything around here changes. It doesn't have that feeling. And so then everything else needs to go right for it to matter, and everything else hasn't gone right. And meanwhile, you have Adam Cole, who's doing, I won't call it comedy, but a little bit of a slapstick element to him standing there when Red Dragon walk off one way and the Bucks walk the other way, and he doesn't know which way to go, and he's torn in half. Like, it's just, he's got this other thing going on instead of his focus being, I'm going to become champion, and that means more to me than anything else. So, again, it's a lack of cohesive focus on what I think the top priority should be, and I think it has left AEW enthusiasts excited about another pay-per-view, but limited the expansion of pulling more people in who have decided to pass on past ones.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, they had their first show, Double or Nothing, and then you went into the Chris Jericho era where, you know, you started on Dynamite and Chris Jericho was playing total heel, and it was, you know, he had a great feud with Cody, and then with Jon Moxley. Then you had the Jon Moxley era through the pandemic, and I thought he was a terrific champion there. And then Kenny Omega turned heel, and it became a new era with Kenny Omega. And I feel like then we hit All Out, where we had three major debuts on that show. Well, you know, CM Punk's first match, and then you had Bryan Danielson come in, and as well as Adam Cole. And that's, you know, kind of been the same era of bringing in these new guys all the way through up to today, that it became less of the focus was on the champion and the direction of the championship, and became more of the direction of what's Bryan Danielson doing, what's CM Punk doing, you know, and less so with Adam Cole at this point. And so I feel that AEW is best served, and every wrestling promotion is best served when they put the primary focus on the championship. And now they had a long story going on with Hangman Page that they really couldn't derail again, especially when that championship change was supposed to happen at All Out. But, you know, circumstances with Hangman personally changed that. So you couldn't really get around not giving Hangman that championship and then just take, you know, your choices right. are is to have what's going on right now or just, he doesn't win the big one. So they kind of were into a corner with signing these big guys. But, you know, I mean, honestly, they would have been better served if you took out the Hangman equation and you gave that championship to a CM Punk or a Bryan Danielson because they just feel like so much more of a bigger deal on the show right now.
All right. We'll move on here. Again, if you're live streaming the show, you're still welcome to give us a call, 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad when you call, 347-215-8558, and then push 1. You can still email us, too. We'll get to some of your email questions later. Wade Keller, podcast at pwtorch.com. We have a Skype or international caller. I believe we're going to try this. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from. Go ahead. If you're calling internationally or on Skype, this might be you. State your name if you're on hold.
Yes, hello.
All right. Yes, it's you. Yep. Go ahead. State your name and where you're calling from.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's you. Hello. Unbelievable. We just heard you say something, and now you're not talking. I'm seeing if we can make this work. We heard you say unbelievable.
Come on, unbelievable. You're talking to the famous Wade Keller here. Come on.
3, 2, 1. Okay, if you get hung up on it was you, and feel free to call back. Just don't push 1 if you don't want to be on the show. All right.
Unbelievable.
Fair enough. All right. We'll move to Bryant in Boston next. Bryant, I knew I should have gone to you first. Why am I going to this anonymous caller? Bryant, welcome. Good to hear from you. What did you think of Dynamite tonight? What stood out?
Before I get to Dynamite, I just want to hit on a few strategic points. I won't, you know, like sort of broader picture. I won't take too long with that before I get to Dynamite, obviously. So,
yeah, be quick because we're running, Brian. I want to preemptively say we're running really long. We got more people on hold, a lot of emails to get to. So try to keep yourself to 20 seconds before you get to a question.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
As far as the ROH thing goes, I really hope that means with Deonna Purrazzo being the ROH women's champion, I hope that means maybe she'll make an appearance in AEW or something, especially after that jackass Kenny Omega passed up signing her to begin with. Like I said in my email, he has no business
yep.
booking. He has no business booking a bingo game, much less the women's division. I kind of agree with the other callers about the Battle Royal. I wasn't too enthused with that. Like, what the hell are the wingmen doing out there? I mean, shouldn't those guys have been cut or something? I mean, not that I ever want someone to lose their job, but, you know, there's a lot of dead weight on AEW that they should probably cut. And the Battle Royal shouldn't really be used to, gain a title shot or anything. It kind of reminds me of that god-awful stupid Money in the Bank you had, which completely devalued the world title belts. Maybe I'm in the minority on that opinion, but that concept sucked. And then the
I will say one thing, Brian, is they've managed to turn that into a money gimmick, and there's a lot of people look
stupid.
Forward to it. It doesn't Well, you know, it is absolute. It's the Royal Rumble is stupid. Why should you get the headline WrestleMania? Because you managed to duck somebody charging at you, and you can take a nap like Roman Reigns did at ringside for 15 minutes. Like, yeah,
well,
it doesn't make any sense. But the key is you gotta if something doesn't make sense, you have to do everything else right to make it work. And Money in the Bank, I have my issues with it too. But people like it. But it is an exception to a rule, and
yeah.
It's an annual event. And they
draw,
and it draws, and they protect it. I say that with some asterisks, but the Battle Royal, and yeah, there's just things AEW does where they're just not as protected. It just feels like, wouldn't it be fun if?
I really hope Tony Khan doesn't think about doing a Money in the Bank or a Call Your Shot Battle Royal sort of thing, because because it undermines the world champion or the belt if you just have some schmo come in who can just you know, take the belt, taking the champion by surprise and admit that this stupid concept. And I kind of look down upon anybody who thought that was a good idea to begin with. But anyway.
Feast or famine. Feast or famine, baby.
Yeah.
Open
yeah,
up your briefcase. You got a title shot or are you fired? Yeah.
Stupid.
Yeah. Gut
check.
Fundamentals. Brian, a little interjection. Just simplify and stick to the fundamentals and understand that wrestlers, talented wrestlers with bombastic personalities, a mix of these bombastic, compelling personalities with their great athletic skill and the fun and the drama that you can tell within the ropes, without blood, without apparatus, without turning lights off and on, is what makes wrestling draw. And if you strip down AEW of all the stuff that they're doing and you put that energy towards focusing on a core group of wrestlers with coherent storylines where match outcomes matter, and you trust the wrestlers to stand in front of a camera with a microphone and cut a promo, and it's not insider information, it's not teasing a breakup, it's not referencing something from 2004 or 2016 or 1900s, they'd be better off. I really, truly believe that. And if they stripped away all the gimmick matches, I don't think they'd be in worse shape. I know Tony Khan obviously disagrees with that. But maybe some of this is inertia and not thinking otherwise that there's another way to do it, but there is.
And also don't have your now number one contender lose a match to, I hate to say this, but a jackoff like Orange Cassidy. And I know some people like him, but I don't really care.
Yeah.
I look down upon those people that kind of like Orange Cassidy, to be honest. But anyway, my last broad point, and I'll be quick about this one. Tony Khan did mention that he was thinking about bringing in a trios title once Kenny Omega comes back. And I know, I know the whole belt, like too many belts thing. I get that argument, but I do wonder, though, because Lucha Underground did something similar to this where they actually had it intergender a little bit where you had, like, a woman involved. I'm wondering if maybe they do that. I kind of doubt it, but it would be kind of interesting to, you know, kind of throw in, like, a female wrestler on there just to give them something to do. But I'll take your guys' thoughts later on that. But just to get into the show itself, and I'm not going to take up too much time, the Battle Royal was okay, but I thought the first 20 minutes was pretty good, although Khan looked like he was maybe having a little too much caffeine or took a little too much cocaine at the beginning. He didn't look the best at the beginning, you know, a little too hyped up. But the ROH thing, I really liked.
Tony Khan is always hyped up when he's out in front of a live audience. I mean, he just... That's Tony. That's just him. I mean, that's just genuinely him.
Oh, I know he's not right. I'm just making a joke.
I guess I'm just saying he absolutely, like, he doesn't need caffeine to be excited to be in front of a crowd. Like, that is intoxicating. He loves wrestling, and he's rarely in front of the ring on national TV. But when he's at those events, he is so excited. He's just a kid in a candy store doing his job, and it comes across. In the way that it comes across when he's on camera, especially for people who haven't seen him at the live events where he's like that otherwise.
Yeah, the show had a nice beginning, like a good solid 20 plus minutes, you know, with the announcement and then the really great match between Danielson and Daniels. So that was nice to see. Battle Royal May was pretty much what I expected it would be. Teams are in there that shouldn't have been. The main event, I agree with that last caller, I forget what his name was, but he was saying like the Dark Order, like a bunch of job guys, and I have to agree. And, you know, again, it's kind of hard to take Adam Cole seriously in the title picture after they had him job out to the Pudding Gang. I don't really like Jim Cornette that much, but he is right about the best friends being the Pudding Gang, so to speak. Just a dumb decision. I don't care if it's unsanctioned or not. It still counts as a loss in my book. And it's just hard to take him seriously. They should have built up someone else with a title shot, or at least, you know, not job out Cole to an idiot, in my opinion. But Last point I'm going to hit, and then I'll take you guys' answer off the air. And Joel, it's certainly a good catching up with you after a while. I know we talk sometimes on Twitter. I did want to comment on the women's tag match. I thought for sure that Thunder Rosa is going to win this Sunday, but after the tag match where she pinned Baker clean, I'm having second thoughts on that, to be honest. And personally, I do think they should have Baker go over. And whether or not, I mean, based on the last word thing, I think that's probably what's going to happen. But I think a better plan would be to have Baker go over and then through like a screwy finish, and then have then kind of built up Thunder Rosa on a redemption story, and then have her finally win the title at Double or Nothing. That way you give Baker a nice year-long reign and kind of transition it. Anyway, I was wondering what you guys' thoughts were on that, and maybe the trio title intergender thing I brought up.
Sure.
Anyway, thanks, and have a good night.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. Yeah, I say no to the Trails title. That's my vote. I don't think it's the end of the world if they introduce it, but I think the more championships you have, it waters down a lot. I don't think, you know, just a belt being on the line at this point has a positive impact in the short run on a poorly developed match that you want to add artificial importance to by saying, hey, there's titles on the line. But if the titles don't have a rich history, Trios titles in this country, you know, haven't really been a consistent big deal. I mean, the Von Erichs and Freebirds turned into something, but that would have worked without titles because it was the Von Erichs and Freebirds. My God, they were just, you know, just one of the great all-time wrestling feuds. So I'm against that. If they introduce it, it's not the end of the world, but I'd just rather have them have three people face three people and have a reason that people cared beyond just to try to make it seem like it's important. I think you can accomplish the same thing in other ways. Joel, your thoughts on the Trios title?
Yeah, Brian, nice to talk to you as well on here. With the Trios title, I mean, yeah, I'm on the same page with you, Wade, that I thought there was a time for it, in the earlier stages of AEW where they could have introduced this, you know, as another championship. But at this point, I mean, especially after they have the TBS title, I just think that there's just too many on the show at this point where, you know, you start to like look at rosters like New Japan and it's like, oh, that guy has a championship. That guy has one too.
Uh-huh.
And it's just kind of like, okay, well, do they really mean anything after a certain point? You know, and you figure out that it's just kind of a way to give, you know, some of their lesser shows a little bit more importance by throwing a title match, you know, into the main event there. And I think that AEW, when we're already talking about how much stuff is onto the show, the frenetic pace of all their shows, trying to cram all these people on there, I think just the last thing they need is now having to worry about a championship and giving that more prominent TV time, taking away from some of the other big-time players on the show. I can't make a good argument for it. But then same thing with, Baker and Rosa is that I just don't, you know, I don't think that this has been built up the way that people had hoped it would be. And I think that at this point, if they were to give the title to Rosa, it just wouldn't feel like this crowning moment, like people had hoped for. And so I think they'd be better off at this point just having Baker go over Thunder Rosa, whether it's cheating or clean, and then just build to another rematch for this sometime down the road where they could do, you know, a stipulation for it. I'd be fine with that. And then just kind of really make it around Thunder Rosa finally beating Britt Baker. And, you know, Baker can go on to just kind of be her own character, maybe officially turn babyface, and just let Thunder Rosa be the one to carry the baton going forward.
All right. Let's keep rolling through calls here. We'll go to Dave in New York next. Dave, good to hear from you. What stood out on Dynamite tonight for you?
Hey, Wade, how you doing?
Dave, good. Good to hear from you. Yeah, what'd you think of Dynamite?
Great. So, Wade, I just want to give you my take on a couple of things. I actually enjoyed Dynamite for the most part. I have a couple of questions regarding the whole ROH thing, and I wanted to get your input on this. First thing I thought of, number one, with this happening right off the bat, is how this affects Impact with the On and No More storyline, which I don't think really anybody's touched on because it felt like an interpromotional feel. Now I think it kind of takes some steam away from that, and I wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, this has ramifications that go beyond that. I mean, you think Tony Khan has the New Japan Forbidden Door. He had Kenny Omega and Don Callis on Impact, and he appeared with Shivani on Impact. And now there's been some interaction between ROH and Impact during this sort of, you know, hiatus post whatever final battle goodbye show that ROH had before they were revving up to likely restart. And there's been some interpromotional stuff. We've seen the ROH title on tour, and this is going to have ramifications on that. You know, so yeah, Joel, what do you think? I mean, I don't think Tony's super concerned about what it does to Impact or what was going on with the ROH title. I think he also is the type who will let things play out because I think he is on friendly terms and wants to be with other promoters. I don't think it necessarily has to get in the way of anything that's going on Impact. That's my kind of quick take with everything going on. How about you, Joel?
Yeah, you know, I haven't been following as much with Impact, but I am aware of the Honor No More faction that's come into the promotion. And so, I think that they're just going to continue on, you know, doing, you know, what they're doing in Impact. But, you know, as far as AEW, I think that you may see, you know, some of the stuff of the champions returning, you know, into AEW. But at some point, you would have to think that they're going to dissolve those. Unless there's the unlikelihood of them continuing the promotion, which you know, the more we've talked about it, the more there's been time to digest the news of all that. It just seems like that's a very unlikely scenario for that to happen.
Dave, back to you.
Yeah, definitely. I would definitely agree with your point on that. I was curious when you went into depth in terms of Tony buying ROH and, you know, creating it as a secondary brand. I really want to see if they can create an actual identity, an actual in-ring competition, and give it its own stamp, because WWE had that chance with WCW, and they failed miserably.
Yeah, I agree. It will be a conversation we have for the next week or so, and probably months, you know, as this plays out. How much is it even worth that effort? To do that also, you know, I mean, but if you're going to do it well, make it count. Joel, your thoughts.
Yeah. I don't think that they're going to do, you know, this extensive stuff with ROH, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. Tony trying to put all his effort into AEW and building that as the number one brand. Why would you then put your efforts into trying to build up this other brand to have people go pay money to see when, you know, you could say, ROH with the little, you know, AEW logo in the corner, I think, you know, ECW, WWE, you know, something like that. But it just wouldn't work that way. I just can't see it being successful.
Yeah. But I mean, I was thinking, as you know, Danielson wasn't doing the code of honor at the end. Are we going to get some sort of ROH faction, either alum or people who were last associated with it, including perhaps the Briscoes, who take exception to what Brian's doing, and that sets up, you know, some sort of faction warfare that doesn't necessarily lead to ROH being a full-fledged, equal-sustaining brand with its own identity and sense of purpose, but he uses the brand as an excuse to enhance a feud and create a, you know, ROH-CZW or invasion angle in WWE or NWO outsider type thing with some ROH talent, you know, in the Briscoes.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. Yeah. I'd like to see them bring in people like the Briscoes and some of the other name talent that's, you know, associated with the brand of ROH. And then that's kind of how you can inform the viewers more about that brand and that promotion and what it means to wrestling fans and, you know, how it connects into the whole world. But I'm not a fan of them trying to bring into a faction and do some sort of invasion or anything like that. I mean, that's fine that Impact is doing, you know, a version of that. But as far as AEW, I think that there's so many other bigger things to worry about than trying to inform people about, hey, here's some guys who are in a promotion that didn't quite make it and wasn't really, you know, Sinclair didn't really buy into it all the way. And so here they are trying to do this and trying to, you know, make more inferences for their viewers. So I just don't like it.
All right, Dave, anything else?
No, anything that's definitely it. I definitely have a lot of interest in the AEW pay-per-view. I would say a lot more than WrestleMania easily. And I'm literally cringing on the idea of, as a side note, of McAfee and McMahon in the ring.
I mean, you know, McMahon and Austin Theory as a tag team against McAfee and some partner of his choice, where McMahon can come in and get a little, you know, little moment. If he can, you know, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but not tear a quad entering the ring, and doesn't decide he needs to prove how macho he is and does something that overextends himself and it leads to some sort of scary moment or tragedy or injury. I mean, I don't know.
I think it's a bad idea. I think it's a really bad idea to bring him back out into the ring. I mean, who knows? There's so many smoke and mirrors that you can do with Vince. But I mean, I don't think he's going to have the same physique, you know, that he has in his previous matches at all. So how is he going to come out to the ring? Is he going to be wearing a suit? Is he gonna, you know, that's a big question for me. But also, I mean, like, if you've seen this guy, I mean, he has not aged well. And I feel like this is really setting up for something that could go wrong. And now I'm sure WWE is thinking those things through and trying to have, you know, plans if something does go wrong to get Vince out of there. But I just don't think it's a good idea whatsoever to bring him out there.
No,
I think there's other options to try and draw people to WrestleMania. I mean, if they do announce Steve Austin against Kevin Owens, I mean, that's going to give a push to tickets. I don't think it's going to sell out both buildings right away, which is crazy, you know, thinking about a Steve Austin return match and it's not going to sell out WrestleMania. But I just think that there's so many other options, and bringing Vince back into the ring is just such no, it's a bad idea.
Yeah. All right. Dave, appreciate the call. Good talking
to you. Thank you, guys.
Yep, you bet. All right, we'll go next to Jay in Hartford. People have been on hold a long time. I appreciate your patience. Hopefully we've been keeping you engaged for the last couple hours. Jay, what's on your mind tonight about Dynamite?
Hey, Wade, no problem holding up. Good evening to you and Joel. So I wasn't calling about this, but you guys mentioned it a couple callers back with Tony Khan and his appreciation for the crowd. And his excitement. Like, I attended Dynamite in Connecticut last week, first Dynamite show, and I sent you, like, this long email about it. But anyway, Tony Khan tonight repeatedly said, oh, my God, thank you guys for being here. Thank you guys for being here. He said it to the camera. He said it to the live audience. And just, I mean, it's genuine. He really appreciates, like, his audience. And so it just, him saying that repeatedly, took me back to, and then you know, mentioning it a little bit here on the call tonight, took me back to my experience last week when he came out and just the way they present the show to a live audience, which I won't get into because this is not about last week's show, but you feel like you feel like you matter to them as a paying customer. So, but moving on to what I really wanted to get to, the Ring of Honor thing, I've never followed Ring of Honor, really ever, but obviously I'm very familiar with it and with a lot of the stars that come from there. I've seen some of the shows sporadically, like when they were on, I don't know, Access TV maybe or something like that. So to me, when he announced it, like my knowledge of them is that they're still a company with current champions and a roster or something. So I figured, okay, they're going to exist as a promotion. And I was curious why they, and, you know, I guess their wrestlers aren't really scripted, but Daniel Bryan says, oh, you know, but this, you know, in ROH we would do the handshake, but this isn't ROH, this is AEW. And so right then I immediately started to get this sense of they're kind of minimizing ROH, like, oh, I know he's a heel, but there was a way he could have done that where he could have said, but, you know, but I don't care about Honor right now or something like that, as opposed to saying, but this is AEW where we care more about fighting. And then later on, the Acclaimed made a statement about, we're going to send you back to ROH. And so I'm like, you just make this big announcement like, hey, look what I did. I bought ROH, which I thought the announcement lived up to the hype, again, because I'm not that familiar with it. So I'm thinking, oh, he's going to keep this wrestling company going as a wrestling company. So I thought it was a big deal. But then I thought they immediately turned around and had, like, their guys, like, shoot ROH down like they were nothing. So did you catch that, or did that really – do you think that mattered much?
Joel, did you catch it?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, I was acknowledging that Danielson, you know, he wanted to talk about the handshake and, you know, say that this is AEW. I don't think that we're going to see, you know – I mean, I don't want to be totally wrong on this, you know, because obviously there's going to be a Super Card of Honor show, but I think that because they say they want to continue the legacy of Ring of Honor, I think they want to talk more about it like it's something in the past, you know, that I don't think that there's that they're going to be trying to promote this as another thing, because that's just way too much for Tony Khan to take on, you know, unless he's, like another caller said, that they're going to bring in Cody and have Cody run the promotion. I just don't think that it's something that, you know, that they want to put too much into.
All right, Jay.
All right, and I
speak up for us.
Absolutely. Battle Royal, I agree with everyone else, especially being someone who attended last week, and I didn't like that Battle Royal in person. Didn't like it even more tonight. I'm like, why are we doing this? Why are we having battle royals to lead to a triple threat match, let alone, you know, having one to just get you one set of contenders? So, but here's what I really want you guys to touch on for me, and I'll this will be my last point. MJF and Punk. It was great up until, I don't want to say last week, it was great up until tonight. Last week is when they started to lose me, so it ties into tonight. So I'll go back to last week being there, right? When MJF was cutting his promo, we absolutely knew he was full of it. Okay, he's a heel. He did a great job. The guy's amazing, right? And the problem I had with it was, I understand he was telling his story, but when he got into, you know, they were calling me Little Jew Boy, and he kept saying that, and we couldn't boo him because, like, we didn't want to cheer him being bullied. You don't want to cheer his disability. You don't want to cheer the basically racist comment. So at that point, it was kind of like a hush fell over the crowd because now what do we do? And so it kind of takes you out of the feud a little bit. And then Punk coming out, we didn't really know what was going there. You could tell, I guess he was trying to say, hey, what is this? Yeah. I had to watch the show back on television to see that he came out basically trying to understand if MJF was being sincere. But I think you brought up earlier tonight, like, was it even necessary? And it wasn't to go that far, for MJF to go that far, just to lead to a low blow, which he could have done for any other reason. But I think it goes back to the beginning of the feud, where that first, I don't know, the first or second week when they did like the 20-minute promo battle, which was like one of the greatest things ever. It was really good, but they gave away so much that perhaps they ran out of things to do. And so maybe that's why they had to have MJF maybe do all that last week to lead to tonight. But I can hang up after this. But this segment, though, that I thought Punk, to your point, Wade, he did a very good job of not just giving in, you know, and being forgiving right away. So I thought that was his intelligence showing there to say, hey, I'm still skeptical, and it made me question myself, but I wish he hadn't gone in for the hug. Like, he could have, like, cut that promo and backed off and said, you know, but I'm not there yet, you know? So I'm like, yeah.
Right,
I still thought he looked a little dumb. Like, don't go in for the hug. This guy, wait another week for that. But the blood completely turned me off. Once they did the angle with the blood and they zoomed in on the knot on his head and the blood squirting everywhere, I no longer have the desire to see the match. And I don't know if it took anyone else, like, to that extreme, but I was like, that's it, I'm done. That was the match for me. I don't need to see them do something similar on Sunday, which I doubt they'll have that much blood Sunday. This was supposed to give me hype for that, but it did the opposite. So I think they had me sold all up until last week, where they started to lose me, and then tonight with the beat down, they totally lost me, and I am no longer hyped for this Dog Collar match. Everything else I think will be fine on the pay-per-view, but this, if they took it off the card, I wouldn't even care. So I think they did the opposite of what they were trying to do, at least for me.
Well, I think when wrestlers bleed, they are not sure, you know, how much they're going to bleed. I mean, I don't think the cliche "it's art, not science" applies here, because it's not really art. But the point is knowing how much you're going to bleed when you gig yourself is tough to predict. I doubt if Punk had more precise control over what would happen, he would not have gone that far. I mean, that's, you know, within the 90 percentile of the most blood anyone's ever bled on a wrestling show. I mean, because that's when your face is completely red and there's blood gushing that you can see pulsating out of your cut, it's hard to go much further than that. So, yeah, it was too much. And it wasn't needed. And it, again, Punk and MJF, and I don't want to take away the performances and the drama and, you know, how compelling aspects of this were. And I think some things were very, very well thought out and well executed in the moment of the segment. But I just sort of feel like Punk and MJF kind of hit a point where I just needed Alex Marvez to ask Punk a question and Punk to fire off a 75-second promo about what this match means to him and how he feels about MJF and what's going to happen Sunday. And then an hour later, you have Tony Schiavone holding the microphone for MJF. MJF's mean to Tony and then replies something Punk said, keeps it to 75 seconds, and reminds us the match is happening and walks off set, and that's it. And the rest of the focus should have been on heating up Hangman and Cole. And
heating up Thunder Rosa. They had done enough to build up this match. They had done enough. Yeah, you're right.
And to emphasize that you can have a post produced video packet. Some of AEW shows were when they had 7 days to refine it and add post-produced features, some of that pizzazz and all that, where they're not just trying to keep the live crowd engaged and make everything live and frenetic. This was kind of weak. Just take a deep breath. Let Punk and MJF talk a little bit backstage. No blood, no big angle. This would have precluded what happened last week, too, you know, because I think you could have done this angle without those two segments or just done those two segments 3 and 4 weeks ago. So then it has a little time to breathe, and they just – so, I mean, there's something to be said for hitting a crescendo within the week of a pay-per-view, and I get that. I'm pitching generically, and in this case specifically, for sometimes it's okay to just have someone backstage hold a microphone, ask a question, and not lead to an interruption or an angle, but go old school and let somebody who's really good on the mic, like Punk and MJF are, efficiently in 75 seconds practice their craft, lay out, look in the camera, and get people emotionally invested in the match without doing another angle and having a big swerve and having all this other stuff. Like I come away from this show kind of wanting some things to be simplified. Cause I think it's just too much. And I think sometimes they're losing their focus, and like Hangman Page could have been the backstage interview. Hangman, you've got this challenge with Adam Cole. He's held world titles everywhere he's been. He's taken some personal digs at you. You've been through a lot as champion already. What does this title shot Sunday mean to you? What happens if your title reign comes to an end? How do you evaluate about it? And if you beat Cole, what does that say to you? And do you expect him to go away if you do? And who's next? Like, there's all just sort of regular sports-like questions you can ask. And Hangman can, again, bond with the audience by talking about the points that are already established and underlining and reinforcing them, connecting with the audience, looking at that lens as if you're talking to Adam Cole. And he'd be great at that. You can drop Adam Cole in a 1975, 1985, and he'd be great in that role. And they just don't give him that chance. They make everything more complicated than it needs to be. And sometimes if it's simple, they exclude it for something complicated that they don't need to be doing, when doing something instead simple with other wrestlers would make a bigger difference. So there's my take on that. Joel, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think AEW just needs to not be so as focused as trying to have these big moments in front of their audiences all the time. So I feel like on a lot of their shows, they're always trying to have these big bombastic moments that you remember, I was at that Dynamite when this happened, you know, and so obviously seeing CM Punk, you know, being lulled into MJF, then the nut shot, and then getting a bloody face is going to be a lot more memorable for the people in the live crowd versus, you know, doing a backstage segment. And, you know, on the flip side of that, one of the things that we've talked about since the beginning of the promotion is that I've always been an advocate of doing more of those just simple, quick promo video packages where they can, you know, get the basic information out there to get you excited about the match. Here's the storyline that's going on. Here's a quick recap without doing the full countdown to the pay-per-view, the whole, you know, you can do a shorter version of that and then throw it to a quick, you know, interview or a quick promo of them, you know, to hype up the match. But yeah, for this, for CM Punk and MJF, I mean, that was a lot of blood. And like you said, that CM Punk, you don't really know how much blood you're going to bleed. I mean, it was kind of like Dustin Rhodes when he had his match against Cody, where it was just, you know, so much blood. And I think that this, you know, this coming Sunday at the pay-per-view, that you're probably going to see just as much blood in that match, but from both guys.
Yeah. Yep. All right, Jay, anything else you want to add?
Well, just before I hang up, I said I was done. I lied. In case no one else brings it up, can you guys make sure you just hit on Wardlow? That's all I got. he's great. I hope I don't do too long to pull the trigger.
Wardlow.
Gotcha.
Yes, sir.
Sure thing. Well,
he's doing so great.
Yeah, sure thing. Thanks, Jay. Great to hear from you as always. By the way, Wardlow, I have a message. Joel, I know you'll back me up on this. If MJF fires you, I think I know someone who will hire you. You will not be homeless. MJF's messing with you. It's not an indentured servant to MJF or you're homeless. I think I can get you in touch with Tony Khan. I know a promoter who I think would be interested in your services. So if that influences your decision whether to stick with MJF and him making you do terrible things that go against your principles, just hit me up. I'll put you in touch with this promoter who hires wrestlers, and I think he'd be interested in you. I mean, that aspect of it is a stretch. And I've seen other people, you know, joking around, you know, that you know, Wardlow can show up on Sunday with like a, you know, his grandmother died and he got inherited a bunch of money, or he won a sweepstakes or the lottery, and now I don't need you, MJF. It's like, no, just the whole having to believe that he is homeless if he doesn't do what MJF tells him makes Wardlow look like a moron. It's not believable. And they've played this out too long. Yeah. And I am not a fan of how long Wardlow could have been somebody who you don't think is ready to be a good dude, but he's been ready to be a good dude for months. And Sean Spears is so agile. How can you not punch Sean Spears in the face after 2 weeks? And it's been months on months. And like, people are going to lose respect for the fact that he has a chance to punch Sean Spears in the face. Everybody would like to, and he hasn't done it after all this time because he's afraid he's going to be homeless if he doesn't. I'm not a fan of this. I thought they tried to clean it up this week, and I'm glad they did because I know they have their rationale for why Wardlow sticks around doing MJF's dirty work, and I think MJF needed to remind us of it, and he did. So points for that. I just don't think, even if it's well executed, it makes any sense. Feeding Wardlow big guys like they did, I think it was last Friday on Rampage, and then tonight on Dynamite. Was it Dynamite? Anyway, that's fine. I'm getting Omos's storyline mixed up with T-Bar, or I don't know. I think they could be getting more out of this too, in terms of like making it seem like this is a big deal, being against an opponent this size. I felt that way with T-Bar also. You know, get more out of it when you do it. And that just comes to AEW overbooking their shows. All that said, yeah, Wardlow is, I think the Symphony of Power Bombs feels a little bit like marketing and, you know, like it's a marketing gimmick. And I think AEW fans don't want to be subjected to that too much. It feels, you know, a little bit like what WWE would assign Roman Reigns back when they're pushing him as a babyface. But I think it's working well enough. And yeah, he's got something going for him. Remains to be seen what he can do outside of the confines of this angle, but there's some signs that he could thrive. What do you think, Joel?
I mean, I just want to see, you know, that they have a big blow up and MJF says, man, you're fired, Wardlow. Get the hell out of here. You're going to be on the streets. And Tony Khan goes to Twitter and he says, I have a major announcement and it's going to be this coming Dynamite. And he comes out and he says, I've signed Wardlow. Wardlow, we're taking you off the streets. I'm giving you the opportunity of a lifetime.
Yep.
You could be champion someday. I am so happy. This is as big of a signing as Christian Cage. This is a major, major deal. So yeah, I feel that it's been it's been totally overcooked by this point, that there was an opportunity to turn Wardlow and have that moment. And I feel like it's just kind of now it's been sitting in the oven for a while and they're trying to patch it back together and get it back to something. So, I mean, obviously I think the fans are going to pop for when it does eventually happen, but I'm still pretty skeptical as far as Wardlow being out on his own. I mean, this is going to be a big opportunity for AEW to see when they're really kind of pushing a big guy wrestler on his own, someone that they tried to make in their promotion, not somebody that they plucked from somewhere else, like a Lance Archer, Jake Hager, someone along those lines. This is a big guy they're trying to make on their own. And, you know, I think there remains a lot to be seen as far as how he's going to succeed. I really can't point to I can't say what his ceiling is going to be at this point. I feel like we need to see what he looks like on his own, and hopefully he thrives.
All right, very good. Let's quickly go to Ryan, and then and we'll wrap up our callers with Javier, with the Javier jingle. Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland, thank you for holding. What have you got for us?
My question's on the Ring of Honor announcement. Is Sinclair going to be involved at all with this, possibly like sharing it like on their stations when they relaunch or any other affiliation, or are they completely done with the company?
Yeah, that I don't know. There's nothing stopping Sinclair for being a distributor. You know, we've seen that before where a conglomerate owns something and then divests but still airs it. So I don't know the answer to that as of tonight. I think they own Bally's Regional Sports Network, and Bally's wants to spin off and do a paid service, like a standalone streaming service. At least that was the thing a year ago they were talking about. So maybe they're like, we don't want to own the company, but we'd like the content, and we'd like to offer it on our standalone, you know, streaming service that people are going to pay $10 or $20 for to watch their local sports teams. So I don't know. I mean, I'm just speculating wildly here. Joel, nothing seems to stop Sinclair from still distributing the product, but I do not know if they have any interest in doing so.
Yeah, I mean, that's more of the information that we're going to be finding out in the coming weeks here. I have no idea which way.
What else, Ryan?
Another question I have is on the CM Punk angle. Is there a reason why the NWA had such an issue of using Blood? You know, I think Dusty Rhodes got in trouble with the Road Warriors. I thought the Midnight Express had an angle, too, with the Midnight Express where there was a Blood issue. You said, you know why? They sort of loosened up a little bit on, like, the Blood on their wrestling programs. Ever, like,
are you talking about TBS as a – are you talking about TBS in particular as a network?
I think, 605, you know, the content that was on, you know, like WCW or it would be NWA,
well,
I guess.
I don't think
Saturday night.
I don't think anybody's left. I don't think Jeff Siegel's still around. I think that was one of the executives. I mean, I think it's just a different era of cable. It's a different era. I mean, there was the Maryland State Athletic Commission where Luger meant to blade like Punk and barely bladed, and they called off the Ric Flair. You know, his he was on the verge of winning, and the Athletic Commission was part of an angle to call off the match. So, I mean, there's been different reasons to not do Blood, and Vince McMahon has gone back and forth on it, but he's been pretty consistent for quite a while now against it, because it no longer was a net positive for him to take the chance. You know, he didn't. The idea of blading and bleeding just didn't have an upside compared to the downside. So he decided to be strongly against it. But Tony Khan is for it. And wrestlers do not need their arms twisted. They have nostalgia for those old magazine covers and those Ric Flair flinging his head back and the blood throughout the hair. And, you know, yeah, I mean, there's just, you know, Bobby Heenan love blading. And, oh, my God, it's just – wrestlers know that stuff, and they want to have that moment too. But there's a little bit too much in AEW of, wouldn't it be cool if we did this because it was done in the past? And some of the bleeding, I think, falls, you know, into that category where you want to have that person at the top who is regulating excessiveness just regulating excessiveness of some things and making things count more efficiently. Ryan, anything else?
Final question is on Daniel Bryan. You know, Christopher Daniel's eye injury is as bad as what Daniel Bryan's eye is, because I know I read his book, and Daniel Bryan talked about having a really bad eye injury where he's, like, about almost blind in one eye. Is that, like, how Chris Daniels is now, or does this look really bad?
I don't know the extent. I'm more curious to find out now after seeing it tonight. Joel, do you know anything more about that? I don't think – Jim Ross going – ooh, that's not pleasant to look at, or whatever the line was. I was like, come on, JR. Like, that's a little rough. I don't know the extent to which his vision is affected, but I mean, they're certainly selling it as if it was, and looking at the eye, it's believable that it's in rough shape.
Yeah, I don't have any other information other than what you guys talked about, but yeah, it does not look like a good thing at all. Anything with your vision, you want to be very careful about, because it's such a fragile thing. I mean, you know, we just had the coach who just got fired, Mike Zimmer of the Minnesota Vikings. You know, he just was at a practice and just scratched his eye, you know, and he almost went blind in that eye. And so you want to be very careful with those types of things. And I don't know anything else more about it.
Cool. Ryan, appreciate the call. Thanks for holding.
Okay. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure. Yep. All right. It is time for
going down, down, down to Miami. Talking to Javier.
Javier from Miami. Good to talk to you. PW Torch contributor.
Hey.
How you doing?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Wade. Hey, Joe. How's it going? Been a while since I've talked to the both of you, apparently.
Yes, yes.
That was fabulous.
You like the jingle? I was going to say, you like the jingle? Yeah.
Of course I did.
Yes.
Yeah.
Doesn't take much.
even if it did, you'd still be impressed.
Yes.
Javier,
I'm excited.
Let me got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. Just real quick on the Christopher Daniels thing. There wasn't ever a specific stipulation when Christopher Daniels, they were on a losing streak, him and Kazarian. And after he screwed up in a match, he said that I'm holding you back. I'm breaking up the team. Kazarian said no. He said, okay, fine. We'll give this one more shot. If we lose again, then we're done. So it was more like a promise with Kazarian. And then, you know, they went on their run. They lost to the Young Bucks because of cheating. And then that's when Kazarian became the elite hunter, getting revenge for them, you know, breaking up the group. Now Daniels did talk about that he was basically going part-time after this was done, that he was, you know, just going to work mainly as a producer and, you know, whenever they would need him. And this is his first, I believe this is his first non-Jericho Cruz match that he's had for AEW, although he's been popping up in other places like New Japan Strong and Defy.
Okay, yep. So thanks for clarifying that because, I just didn't have a recollection of if that tag team breakup did include him just kind of throwing in the towel and retiring, but it still wouldn't have been breaking a stip if it was just saying I'm done either. You know, it wasn't like that was the selling point of a major match. Hardly it's a high crime if he had just said, okay, I'm done, and then he came back.
Yeah. I consider a stip when you're you're telling the company I'm gone if I lose, that sort of thing.
Right. Yep.
The, on the, talking overall, the, cause I'll be going to Revolution. So, I've been, you know, trying to like see, you know, following the hype of the matches and pretty much the match, today, the CM with what happened with CM Punk and MJF, that put it to me for me as the thing I'm most hyped for. Because last week when they had that the promo that MJF cut, and I DM'd you, and I said that, you know, I don't know what to make of this. You know, it was compelling. I really enjoyed, you know, the content, but I did not know where they're going to, you know, how they were going to follow this up, because, you know, it's like, You're left with the option of like, is MJF going to turn babyface? I'm pretty sure that that's not what they're going to do. So it made me want to see what's going to happen this week, which, you know, it's one of the things you want to do because you want people tuning in from week to week. So, you know, so that got me hooked to watch it today. And then when I'm watching it today, I do think that you couldn't have protected CM Punk any better than they did. He, you know, spelled out that he did not, you know, believe him, but, you know, he talked it out with the entire promo that CM Punk talked about. It was talking it out with the audience, going through his mental, his mental state of, you know, or like, you know, basically working out. And he tells the audience, I know this is dangerous, but I'm going to give it a chance because I've been through, you know, I understand what he's going through. And a baby face does that. A baby face allows for redemption. And, you know, he held out his hand. Now MJF just went in and hugged him. You know, CM Punk did not go in for the hug, you know, cause I think that was mentioned, like CM Punk did not, you know, go in for the hug. And as a matter of fact, they spent a long time, you know, cutting to his face, showing like, you know, okay, what the hell do I do? Audience, some people in the audience were chanting, you know, hug him back. And then, you know, that's when he like, you know, went for it, you know, with trepidation. And then, he went for the nut to that point. So I, you know,
but
and then
Javier,
the whole entire
Javier
angle happened. Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Did you think there was any chance, though, that MJF was just going to hug CM Punk and they were just going to walk off and then have their match on Sunday?
Me personally, analyzing it and not, you know, seeing it as a storyline, you know it's not going to happen because this is going to, you know, you're leading to a match of what, you know, what's going to happen. But, you know, because Deke, I think, mentioned it, that, you know, yeah, we all know that he was going to do something to screw, you know, Punk over. We all know that. But here's the thing. You know, you have 10, essentially like 10 stories you can possibly tell. You know, every story basically breaks down to one of those 10. If you have seen stories, you're going to basically, you could easily figure out, okay, well, this is going to have to happen because we know where this is going and, you know, something's going to happen. When you, and that's fine. It's how you, you know, how you get to that point, how you tell the story. You know, for example, the movie came out 355. Sebastian Stan's in the movie. He dies in the beginning of the movie. It's Sebastian Stan. You know he's going to come back, meaning that he's going to be the bad guy at the end of the movie. So, you know, you know this, but, it, you know, whether, you know, how the rest of the story pans out is whether, you know, is what matters. You know, so, and then the reason I say that it's important to, you know, just go with the story is because if you can't write a story or book an angle trying to come up with the one scenario that no one's ever seen, because then that's when you get, you know, swerve culture. Because, you know, there's a difference between twist, and this was a twist. This is a twist to the story, the twist of, you know, because they're, you know, so it was a twist. But swerve culture is where you are purposely leading in one direction and swerving to the other one just to say, oh, look, you didn't think about it. You know, like I a movie I despise is Last Jedi, because the director, basically, there were a lot, you know, between the first Star of the new sequels, the first Star Wars and the second Star Wars, there were a lot of fan, you know, a lot of fan speculation of where the second sequel were going. And he specifically went out of his way to write the story so that none of the predictions were true, leading to some of the most, you know, dumb decisions. And now you, in a movie, you know, in that case, you could have done like one or two to really, you know, oh, that and be interesting. But the fact that it was like everything in the movie was like that, it, you know, nothing felt like it had permanence, which is why, you know, the whole, you know, it's a swerve bro thing is like, I hate it, you know, but that's not the same thing as a twist. So, you know, there was a twist in the story, you know.
And I agree with you, Javier. I'm just all I'm saying with it is that it's like I didn't like the whole idea of going through this twist, you know, between MJF and CM Punk, because it was so obvious that of course he's going to turn on him, and for Punk to allow himself to believe that there's this possibility of some redemption, I'm not buying it. You know, and other people can. I'm just saying that me personally, I'm just not buying it.
Yeah, I mean, but that's one thing that we have lost, like, we've kind of lost the sight of, like, you know, virtue hero things. You know, when you watch movies nowadays, I'm getting a little bit philosophical here, but, you know, he said the all everything, and you know, he laid it out. I mean, I don't think he could have laid it out any better. I think he almost made, like, almost every single logical reason as to why not. And then, you know, so it wasn't necessarily a stupid thing, because what caught him off guard was the hug, because he only offered the hand. What caught him off guard was you know, what he was not expecting. And at that point, you know, yeah, he could have pushed him away, but then, like, you know, think about it. You push him away, well, you know, if he's being legit, then, you know, I'm pushing him away and I'm causing more hurt, which is what the storyline he's led to believe at that point is. So while he is trying to make that, you know, while that's going through his mind and he's trying to figure out, well, do I pull away? Do I push away? You have the audience, you know, chanting, oh, hug him back, you know, and then, you know, took like I said, you know, then he took the hit, which, you know, I think it was as protected as you could possibly get. I mean, if at the end of the day, you know, the storyline didn't work for you, then it's just better not to do that story. And that's a different conversation.
Joel, go ahead. I know there's a delay with Javier, and but I do want to hear what you had to say to that. And if anytime there's a pause, just let the pause kind of play out before people start talking over each other. Go ahead, Joel.
Sure. Yeah. And what I'm saying is that I agree with you, Javier, that if they chose to do the storyline, they protected CM Punk the best that they could. But it's just a twist that I would not have gone with, because it's just so predictable the way that's going to play out. And I feel that because they went down this route, it just, you know, because obviously MJF, like you said, I'm a snake. And that's just obvious to everybody. But, you know, I just wouldn't have done it in the first place. But as far as a follow-up to it, trying to protect CM Punk and going down this route, I thought that was all fine.
And then the stuff after that was the beatdown and stuff like, you know, and all that stuff that happened. This is the first time, because, I mean, I keep hearing a lot of people saying, oh, you know, MJF is going to be the one to take the title away from Page. He's going to be the one taking him out. And I had not, until this moment, I had not seen MJF as the, you know, main event, like a main event threat, you know, high up there and an annoyance, but with, you know, just the heartless beatdown, the way that he carried himself, you know, while he was doing that, you know, the cold-bloodedness of it, it's like, okay, now I can buy him as a, you know, as an actual top guy and as a real threat as a champion.
Mm.
It worked for me. So the whole thing worked really well for me. So this one moved to, like, pretty much overtook the match. The second one I'm looking forward to the most is the Brian and Moxley, although that's mostly because I'm looking forward to the actual matchup and what they're going to do in the match. It's also open for the most disappointment because I'm hoping for a 4-star match, and anything under that is going to be, you know, I'm going to be disappointed in it. So I'm looking forward to the in-ring action for that. Then I had the Adam Page, Adam Cole storyline. That moved up because I actually had the Kingston Jericho higher, but it moved up because I thought it was effective. I do agree with that, you know, it was too similar to the Punk one. So I think that hurt it a lot more. But at least it's better than they were, you know, 2 weeks ago, going into it. It is disappointing because this should have been much better, you know. It should have been a much hotter, you know, thing when if you had Adam Cole going after the title. And then the Jericho Kingston. And this one I'm actually curious because I don't think really talked about it. But Jericho just pretty much had the promo that he cut, and then, you know, so since there wasn't very much more added, I was starting getting interested last week, but they didn't really add much more this week. They just basically repeated the stuff they did last week, so it really dropped, you know, my excitement to watch the match. What did you think about that? Because I don't think you guys talked about that.
No, we haven't. I mean, it kind of plays to what I was advocating for, which is a backstage interview. Give someone 60, 70 seconds to cut a promo, or 90 seconds, whatever, and recap where you stand, kind of follow up on what was a bigger deal last week. I would have liked to have heard from Eddie. And I would like if the show had some breathing space for that. But, you know, I don't think we needed any more from, I mean, Jericho just reinforced his character and his turn and the place that he's in now compared to where he was a month ago. So it worked for me. It didn't diminish. I don't think if you don't do a red hot big angle that your interest in a match should be diminished. I think reinforcing a big angle efficiently and actually repeating something, you know, do you have the self-confidence to get over your fear of success? And if you do, I'll look you in the eye and congratulate you. But if you don't, you know, I'm going to laugh at your pathetic ass. I mean, that's what I'm calling for more of. So I like that. But like I said, I would have liked a promo later in the show with Eddie. Joel, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it just underlines, you know, what is the main point of this whole feud that they're having with each other. And I think that at this point, you know, Kingston's got to win this match. You know, I think that he deserves to have this win at this point to elevate him to the new level where Jericho doesn't need it. And I think that Kingston getting a win over Chris Jericho would be a big deal for him.
How about Jericho kicks him in the nuts and then bloodies him and ties him up in the ropes? And, okay, never mind. Go ahead, Javier.
I like it.
Yeah, you brought up the blood. you brought up the blood because you were talking about that CM Punk bled a lot, and I'm just like there's still a lot more he could have done, Wade, because I remember the JBL Eddie Guerrero match. So there's still a lot in between those. So
yes, yeah.
And then of the top matches, the one I'm least interested in is Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa, and I agree with pretty much what Hidden who said it? Yeah, Hidden said about that, because it was just, I mean, it was prime, because after they had that lights out match, and you know, I'm like, wow, that's all they need to do is keep them separate, have, you know, build up Thunder Rosa away from Britt Baker, keep Britt Baker hot, but you know, and then so that Thunder Rosa can rise to the level that Britt Baker's in, and you're going to have, like, you know, a possible main event in your hands. And it just feels like it went the other way around, where it felt like Britt Baker fell to the level that Thunder Rosa was at, as opposed to Thunder Rosa, you know, rising the level that Britt was at in terms of heat.
Yeah, I think that's a fair thing. Joel, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I agree with that assessment, that it feels like, you know, Britt Baker was at this higher level and she's kind of been brought down to where Thunder is. And that's kind of what I'm saying, is that I felt like this should have been a bigger deal. And instead it just kind of feels like another undercard match on the show.
What else, Javier?
I'm thinking that the Wardlow turn probably ends up happening on the follow up Dynamite, and it was funny because I think what's the way it's going to end up happening is, remember, I work for you, and then this would be the perfect time to use the Wardlow is All Elite thing, that the graphic that they use. That would be
yeah,
the perfect
yes,
time
totally.
To use it.
yep, I like that.
So you know. At the risk of
being a hypocrite, since that is only an online social media thing, you know, it's not really something I think AEW has put on their TV before. Some things are worth the pop of the Twitter crowd.
Yeah.
they
have it? Are you sure?
I don't think they have.
Right.
I don't remember them putting it on the big screen.
No, you're right, because it's just so... It feels like it's so big, you know the word I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, ubiquitous, yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, kind of feels like, but yeah, the, so much other stuff. Oh, yeah, the other thing, the most important thing about the ROH library, do they own All In now, as well as a trademark?
Yes.
Maybe Cody owns it. I don't know.
I believe that they do okay. Now own it, because yeah. Ring of Honor did own that footage, because they were behind the production. That was part of their deal, was that Ring of Honor was going to retain that footage. So, yeah, it's a big deal to have that, you know, back into their, you know, that Tony Khan now owns that. But unfortunately, the timing of just purchasing that and Cody was such a big deal of putting that whole thing together. You know, you might have to reconstruct that story a little bit.
Yeah, and I was joking about Cody owning All In, not the actual show, but the name itself, just to imagine a fun complication in the divorce. But yeah, the event itself, that was ROH's deal. So AEW got a piece of their history back. Not back, they now own a piece of the founding history.
And if you do change the name of one of the pay-per-views from whatever it is to All In, what you want it to be?
You can't have All Out and All In. That's like SummerSlam and Spring Slam. Like, no.
You change the Rampage before to be All In, and then you go All Out.
You're giving me a headache, all of you. Stop it.
I know.
Good, my work
you
is
invite
done.
Me on
yeah, it's pretty much yeah, that's pretty much it. Cool. Just be on the lookout for the primer. There are 11 matches on the card, Wade, so we may have to talk about a race.
No, we'll break it into two parts, so, like WrestleMania.
Oh yeah, between that and WrestleMania, I got a lot to do. But yeah, I'll be going to Revolution, so just hit me up if you want anything. So that's about it.
Sounds great. Thanks, Javier. Appreciate it. Good night, talking
guys.
To you. Good night.
Wait, thank you.
Can't get enough of that. All right. Oh God, we got 2.5 hours. I'm making an executive call to not go to mailbag here. I will.
I support it.
Incorporate. Yes, I will incorporate that into something else. Joel, thank you for going longer than Daniel Bryanson. Oh my God, it is. We are 2.5+ hours into this. Bryan Danielson and Hangman Page went in their two matches with the show tonight. Way past that. Been good talking to you again. Boy, I knew when that ROH announcement came, it's like, all right, add an hour to the show.
Yeah. No, it's definitely, you know, it is exciting news still, you know, even though we've talked through it and what does it all mean and stuff. But yeah, I really question the timing of this because it dominated so much of our show going into the pay-per-view.
Will they pop a rating though? And if they pop a rating, it's not because of anything else they announced on the show. It's not the Casino Battle Royale. It's not the six-man tag at the end. It's the Tony Khan announcement. And I think he did I think he believes that when he does hype things like this, it will pop a rating. And mm-hmm. So then the question is, what happened the next hour and 45, 50 minutes? Was that what it ought to have been? I mean, I'm still critical of what they booked on Dynamite after CM Punk's Dynamite debut. I mean, I'm still dumbfounded by it. What a huge lost opportunity, what they followed up with on that Dynamite. So, you know, he might pop a rating in that first 10 minutes and some of the
people. And then everybody
might,
left. Yeah.
Yeah, well, or if they stuck around. They
well,
stuck around
the
for.
Stick around, get some hype for the pay-per-view.
But if they stuck around, did they see an ideal hour and 45 minutes of getting you ramped, hyped up for the pay-per-view? I don't know that they hit every type of viewer. And I think their sales pitch worked on a certain type of viewer that they super serve. I'm not sure that their hype in the last, you know, on this show, if they had a larger than normal audience, they're trying to win some of those people over who aren't watching every week, who only tune in for big announcements. And if they did stick around, I don't know that this was, you know, in totality, a good use of that larger audience to get them to buy the pay-per-view. It was a fun show to watch. If you're an AEW fanatic, they gave you a lot. I mean, I try to step back and look at this, you know, again, with the eye on that second million and the eye on efficiency. And as we've spent 2.5 hours talking about, I think there were some weaknesses here that are part of an ongoing thread with AEW.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Cool. Well, one of our emails said, who cares about ROH? So we could have read that. We had enough of that with callers and a little bit of us. I mean, I care about ROH. The impact on the business, that's the part I'm questioning if we get
it's
away
from it. It's not earth-shattering. Let's just say that. It's not changing the wrestling landscape. It's just another cool thing. Tony Khan owns it, can utilize it, and, you know, it just adds more to the lore of the stories that they're trying to tell.
Yep. Very good. Joel, how can people follow you on Twitter if you desire such a thing?
Yeah, no, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm going to try to be more active on there. As I said, I've been busy with a lot of other things, some business travel, some personal travel, you know, just dealing with a lot of other things. So I'll definitely be trying to watch more of the shows live and be more active on Twitter. But you can find me at Joel Donnell. And also this Sunday, along with Javier, I will be there live at AEW Revolution in Orlando. So whoever's hosting the post show, I will definitely be calling in for that to give my in-person perspective.
I believe that'll be Greg Parks on the PW Torch Daily Cast. So
I owe it to Greg. I owe it to him. He's asked me quite a few times and just hasn't worked out with the scheduling. So, Greg, I look forward to talking with you.
Well, hit him up so he knows, and it should be a good show. Maybe you guys can all do a roundtable together, you and Javier, with Greg talking about things too at some point on the caller portion of the show. Great. Thanks everybody for listening, sticking with us to the end here. Appreciate your support. If you enjoy what we do, you can pay us back with a VIP membership or support us on Patreon, pwtorch.com/govip, or on Patreon at patreon.com/PWTorchVIP. Three tiers starting at $4.99. Various benefits come with that. And you can also do us a favor by going to Apple Podcasts and giving us a 5-star rating if you think we deserve it, and I hope you do. That really makes a difference. And honestly, just 10 of you doing that in 1 week can change the trajectory of our of the algorithm of our search returns and help us expand our audience and bring new callers in and just have more people supporting us. And you might help someone discover a show that they end up really loving and helping their enjoyment and immersion in pro wrestling. So that's one of the quick things you can do. And if you leave a positive review, a written review, that is even a notch better. So go do that now that we're done with our show, if you have 1 minute, a spare minute to hit that five-star thing on our reviews. Cool. Yep. So we'll wrap up there. I'll be by tomorrow night, Thursday night, with the Blue Logo flagship with Todd Martin. And then Friday night, I'll be by with Mike Myers reviewing SmackDown with some more WrestleMania developments. And then this weekend, the Post-Revolution podcast that I'll be part of is VIP exclusive, the post-pay-per-view roundtable, a good reason to go VIP just to hear our post-pay-per-view roundtables, which we've been doing since 2003. And when you go VIP, you can just dive in and stream or download our archives going back like almost 19 years now. Wow, that's crazy. So anyway, thanks, Joel. Thanks, all our callers. Thanks to the emailers we didn't get to. I apologize. And thanks to our listeners, and we'll talk to you all next time.